Well, your moms are just upset. They're probably all on their periods or something.
Mr. Garrison, Wendy and I think that was a sexist statement.
Well, I'm sorry, Wendy, but I just don't trust anything that bleeds for 5 days and doesn't die.
Keep. Capcom. Mel. And here's your host, Matthew Chorney.
I was listening back the newest episode we posted, and it's like, yeah, I can't agree with that sentiment enough. Personally, I could really do with some more me. That's pretty much my motto in fucking life.
Need more of myself.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly my opinions are better. How come my opinions aren't being said more often?
Well, look, at the end of the day, you gotta live in your own head. You might as well learn to like it in there.
You know what? I'm going to use that. I like that. And if that means that you just have to have rabid fantasies about world domination, how everybody else in the world is stupid but you, then that's okay, right?
I mean,
totally valid thoughts.
As long as you don't hurt anybody.
Are just that, fantasies are just that. They are fantasies.
Yeah. Aww. As long as you don't try to make them real.
Well, I mean, I would need an awful lot of power, money, and influence for that to happen, which clearly, since I'm the only one who likes my own opinions, that's never going to happen.
I don't have a dad with a lot of money. I mean, that's the drawing line.
I don't think I know anybody, period, with a lot of money. Like, you know, people usually have, like, that one friend that's well-to-do. I don't think I even have that guy.
I have relatives like that, but I don't think I have any, like, friends like that. That I would be like, oh, they're so well off.
Are you on the will? That's the important part.
Oh, fuck no. I'm not on any of them. No, I've distanced myself from a lot of them. Even, like, my godparents, they probably don't give two shits. And they're, like, two of the most well-off people I can think of.
So I was going to say, so there is a way for you to become one of them. If you understand what I mean.
I get rid of my three cousins, and I take their place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I could inherit
them. If they're wealthy, okay?
I think they own a horse.
Well, there's a good chance that...
Like a racing horse.
They might have some masks in their closet.
Oh, yeah.
And they might be animal masks. And who knows... Once the fucking mask goes on, it's Vader time, alright? And you can just... right? You can just take him out.
Yeah, it's no consequences at that point.
I've heard the phrase, it's Vader time since 96, Matt.
Honestly... No.
No, it's been really said on this podcast many a time, and only on this podcast.
The last time I remember hearing It's Vader Time was watching my VHS Best of Mick Foley compilation fucking tape way, way back.
It's funny, like, I think I told you guys this story before, where, in college, like, anytime anyone would ask me what time it was, I'd look at my watch and then turn my hand to them and make the V with my fingers and go... You fucking know what time it is.
And no one ever asked John what time it was ever again.
Well, to be fair, it is always Vader time.
Always. But, you know, 2 a.m., 3:16 a.m., 4:20. 4:20 is really Vader time. That ain't the weed time. That's Vader time.
I mean, it is if you try hard enough. No matter what. If you truly believe, and if you're not a coward, any time is Vader time.
If you're willing to face down the bull. Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's a genuinely terrifying man, was Big Van Vader. Like, he wore, like, a thong on his face, and it somehow made him scarier. And I think it's that, like, thing where you go, he's already terrifying enough, but he's made himself ridiculous, which makes him somehow scarier.
That's psychology 101, though. If you're already an intimidating person and then you do something stupid that has no explanation, you jump from scary to terrifying. Like, that's just...
Of that,
like,
size,
that man has
yeah.
no reason... Yeah, like, that man has no reason to try to look scarier. But fuck.
He's steering into us.
He just likes looking spooky, you know? Sometimes it's just, like, for the spooky look of it.
Gotta do it, man. Like, that's the thing.
It's the mystery of it. Like, who is behind that mask, and why would a man ever wear it? And expect it to be taken seriously.
Yeah, and then beats the shit out of somebody on TV for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me he saw Vader in the helmet with the smoke coming out of it.
Oh, yeah.
He saw him do that when he was a little kid. He had fucking nightmares about it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like,
Go ahead. You know, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I was like, going, man, you should have just stuck around. Eventually, Sting would have kicked his head in. Like, he would have, it's like, you know, when someone watches a movie or reads a book and they get super duper scared and then they, like, they stop halfway through and, like, you're just like, man, if you had to just wait until the end, Arnold would have killed that dude. That was my thing with The Predator. I watched The Predator for the first time when I was a kid with my mom. And she was just like, I have to stay. I have to stay because I need to know that this thing is going to be dead at the end of it. And I was like, going, it's a Schwarzenegger film. Of course it's going to be dead. The bullet's already left the chamber, okay? It just hasn't hit him yet.
It's going to die in the best way possible. Don't you worry.
Two things, speaking of scary. One, when I was very young, I mean like 4, I had nightmares of The Undertaker after watching like Saturday morning fucking Roundup for WWF. Like, the first time I ever saw The Undertaker, it was the full, like, you know, like movie video, like music video style promo. It wasn't a live promo. It was, like, all, like, and I just remember fucking Paul Bearer's fat fucking head screaming into the camera, and it legitimately terrified me. Like, that man shouldn't be alive. That's not a human. Like, what,
well,
what
thankfully,
the fuck,
Matt,
is that?
He's not anymore.
Well,
so
now.
Okay.
Well, now, but when I was 4,
you're safe, Matt. I mean, it's okay. Just, you don't need to be scared anymore.
He'll just come back stronger, Keith. That's not how it works. Death will only make him stronger.
I mean, true.
And speaking of scary, Keith, why the fuck is the Slender Man behind you?
There's a Slender Man behind me. What, over here?
Can you see see your own camera?
This guy
what
right
the
here.
Fuck is that? Yes.
That's, it looks like a coat.
It's all coats hanging in the background. That's my coat rack.
But it's got like the grayed out fucking face. What
oh,
is
that's
that?
A hat. That's actually a Yingling hat that's been hanging there.
Okay.
That's actually
like,
next
here,
to it. Oh yeah, I can
watch...
see it. Looks like Slenderman is like on my screen. Yeah,
as you've been talking, definitely take a picture of that because as you've been talking, I keep expecting to see your roommate walk from the left to the right, but he's just hanging back there. I'm like, what the fuck is that thing?
Like, he looks a bit more like a dandy Slenderman, though. Like,
yeah, he looks like a dapper, like Slenderman that's getting ready to go out for the evening.
He's got like that ruffled collar, the Austin Powers early Triple H Castlevania collar.
I do have masks hanging there, though, so like it is a mask rack while we're talking about masks.
Looking at this, I'm like, why the fuck is the Slender Man in the back of Keith's room?
Yeah, no, it's got my LARP masks on there, the one for Catman and my Lee mask, my MF Doom mask.
Now that
I
look
said
at
before,
it...
like, if I was in a situation, like the classic cult horror situation, where the masks come out and everybody gets naked and someone's going up on the fire, two things go through my head. One is, I'm like, I'm going to beat one of these people to death, because if I'm going out, one of them's coming too, all right? And the other thing that goes through my head is, oh, man, that looks kind of fun.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, the first question, the real question is, I get a mask, right? Yeah. Like, I'm going to be part of the fun part of this, right?
Oh, I'd be doing the slow backwards walk out, like, checking my watch, like, God, you know what, guys? I'm going to pretend I didn't see anything, but y'all have a great night. I'll see y'all at work tomorrow. I'm not sure. Is that you, Bill, behind the fox mask? No? Okay, well, I'll catch you guys later. You have fun with
that. I said to Mel before, I'm not sure if I said it to you guys, but I said that if I was caught in a conspiracy and there was, like, all these animal mask people chasing me, and I somehow got away, and I decided I had to fight them, I'd make my own juice and thunder liger mask and just be there going, if we're doing it, I'm going to be the liger tiger god.
Oh yeah, dude, yeah. I'd pull on my Lee mask like instantly and be like, "All right, this is the game. If we're playing this game, like I'm gonna hide and I'm gonna take you out one by one."
If I was ever invited to like one of those masquerade balls, which I wouldn't normally want to ever go to, but if I would go if I could get myself a nice liger suit with the big cape,
full body suit. I'm
like, hey, get down to the ground. I'll try and do the shooting star press.
Which one thing my past year of Satanism has taught me is that the only way through the satanic shit is you gotta lean right into it, man. Like, at this point, like, if they're handing out the masks, what are you gonna do, say no? There's no backing out at that
point.
Well,
I mean, the old mask stuff is less satanic, is more earthy in my experience.
More earthy is usually more terrifying, because Satan's only gonna want one.
If someone says to me, like, if I was in a situation, right, where there was, like, some kind of satanic, like, mask going on. I'm not like a Levian satanic mask if there was like a fucking, you know, Eyes Wide Shut style job going on. Mm-hmm. I would just start going, fuckers, I was into this shit way before you.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's how you get through. You act like it's nothing new. You go, oh, we're doing the, oh! I would have brought my mask if I knew it was that kind of party.
You posers. I was doing this when I was 14. You guys aren't even up to snuff right now.
There's like a string board in the corner playing music, and I'm there going, do any of you bitches know how to play fucking Rain of Blood?
You know that one from Eyes Wide Shut? Is that about you guys?
So, I have private text chat on my phone with me and a group of my friends that all went to go see Ghost last month. And after the show, I get a text from one of them that says, we're not going to kill this group now that we've seen the show, right? And I'm like, dude, I've been praising Satan since I was 13. I ain't about to stop anytime. Rest of the world, man, bunch of posers.
I love seeing ex-host Meg. Oh yeah, this is Sidecast High, but ex-host Meg really.
Oh, they know who we are. If you're still with us now, you know who we are.
Ex-host and good friend of the show, Meg.
I like good Meg of the show. That's good a good one.
Wait, y'all should look up at Small Town Inc. on Instagram. They're doing some really awesome ghost art. They are running wild with their ghost fandom right now.
Not they, her.
Her. I know. I just like to say.
Yeah.
I've gotten used to saying they as a very general sort of thing just because it's easier my gender-neutral sibling
I thought you meant the whole of X body art, which she posted on. That's why I would say,
I believe she has her own as well, but I've been saying they for people in general because I don't, you know, gender doesn't always add into it.
I misunderstood. I just wanted to make sure credit was given where it was.
Oh, difficult. Of course. Yeah, don't let any of those other tattoo artists there get the credit. We all know Meg's the best. Fuck everybody else in that shop. Fuck them.
Well, but Meg always goes in hard on everything she gets into, right?
Oh, yeah. It was Attack on Titan like a year or two ago.
When she finds a fucking subject that she likes, she makes it so that everybody around her dislikes it at a certain point. She will not stop. And the good thing is, as far as like music and general goofball fucking, you know, lore to music goes, I'm just as bad, but without 1/64th talent. So this one in particular does not bug me at all. But yeah, like the reason why I have such a grievance with the Game Grumps, which I don't really, but I like to keep it up, is because of her. Because for 4 years fucking straight, it was nothing but Ninja Sex Party, and I'm like, Meg, they only have the two fucking albums. Could you put something else on for
Christ's
sake?
Get ready, Matt, a third's coming. Under the Covers 3 is coming out in like in a month or next year, so get ready, it's coming back.
I probably would have enjoyed them if I didn't have to listen to those albums cover to cover 9 times in 3 weeks, over and over and over.
I get it. But no, my ex was listening to them a lot when we'd be in their car too. So like, that's like one of their great friends. So it's like totally that. I'm like, yeah, of course, you love your.
But I mean, listen, it's not like I don't obsess over the shit I like either. But yeah, when that kid finds a subject she likes, she's been averaging what, 2 fucking fan pictures of this band per day.
Pretty much.
Per day.
Like, they've built a book at this point that you can buy, I think. They're advertising, like, buy this book of shit.
Meg is actually selling prints of the original artwork she's making for relatively cheap, too. So if you like the band, check out Small Town Inc. on Instagram. I'll give her a quick little plug. Because she's actually doing some Christmas-style fucking pictures, too. Great for the holidays, people. Praise Santa. But, what's wrong, Dave?
No. Speaking of Skeleman and Skelemans, I got to cross the bridge that has thwarted you so many times, Matthew, last Saturday when I got to see Pentagon Jr. wrestle in person.
Was it everything you hoped it would be, John?
There's a moment in it that I couldn't wait to tell you about, right? Because they wrestled three kids. I say kids. 3 young wrestlers from Ireland. And there's a moment in it where Pentagon and this guy, Nathan Martin, his name is, they come together in the ring. And they decide they're going to chop each other. You know, like a chop battle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. Pentagon wore that fucking kid the fuck out. Like, he took his glove off and smashed him, and your man tried to give one back, and it just didn't register. And then Penta gave him another one harder, and the kid just took it and, like, gave one back, and it didn't register. And then I thought Penta was going to chop through him. And then the kid just starts throwing forearms. And I just turned to somebody and just went, that's the international language for please stop fucking chopping me. But it was fucking nuts. Like, they were, they had a six-man kind of Lucha Libre-style match with Bray Horace and Penta and Fenix against those guys. And it was fucking batshit insane. Like, they were just, like, Fenix just doesn't have, like, a half speed. It's either I'm in the ring and going to 10 at all times, or I'm not in the ring. And, like, the shit he does where he, like, bounces from the second rope up onto the top rope and then runs across the top rope and kicks a guy in the face. It's incredible. Like,
from what I've been saying about these two forever, for their height and their size, the shit they do is nothing short of amazing, dude. Like, I'm sorry, like, Penta's been my favorite wrestler for the past 3 years. Like, I have not seen a match yet that I was disappointed with him. Like, I mean, granted, I haven't watched all of them, so it's not like I'm, you know, being super hyperbolic about this shit. I'm sure he's got his off days, too. But, like, he's a fantastic fucking wrestler, and Fenix is, in my opinion, the close second. Like, extraordinarily close, so.
Fenix is the first one I saw years ago when I was watching AAA when he was a kid. And I was like, going, whoa, this is him with Drago. You know, the dragon guy?
Yep.
The two of them I was most impressed with. But, there was a whole bunch of guys from Mexico on that show, because Bestia 666 and his brother Super Mecha Wolf were on the show as well. And it was, like, it's just crazy to see all those guys in that smaller building, because, like, you can put the Lucha Brothers on stadium show and sell it out easy if you give them a good match. Yeah. But this was like, this show sold out in like a couple hours because, you know, it was a small show and the opportunity to see these guys was just in that type of venue, especially now that they're on TV every week is like crazy, you know?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I was jealous. I was jealous when you told me about it. I'm like, fuck, I would love to go see that, man.
Oh, man, if I could have gotten you here, I would have fucking gladly brought you to it. But it was... Yeah, it was fucking phenomenal. It was a great night. The Ren Narita, he was the young lion in New Japan until he went on his excursion. He, he was there as well. He's, you know, journeying the world now, earning stripes. And it was just great to see, like, these New Japan guys under Kiki's Delivery Service style. John, which is how I describe that to people. You're just like, yeah, you learn all your apprentice shit. And then you do the Kiki's Delivery Service trip to the other city, and you learn new moves and dye your hair and get tights, and then you come back. But
it's a fucked up accurate description of the whole fucking thing.
I was describing the New Japan Young Lion excursion thing as being basically the real world version of movie Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah,
where they. They learn all their little moves at home in the dojo, and then they have to go out into the world and show everybody what they can do and, you know, get new tights.
Yeah, I was describing Kiki's Delivery Service to Shannon as a witch's rumspringa, like, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
like, but that's a better, I think that's a better description,
it's a learning excursion.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was funny, like, when he lost the match and, everybody was just like, he was sitting in the ring and he was upset, and everybody was just there going, oh man, Shibata's gonna wear that fucker out when he gets back to the dojo. And everyone was just there going, fucking don't tell him it happened, just say you won. There's a guy called, his real name is Barry, and his wrestling name is Be Cool. And this dude is the funniest fucking guy in wrestling, is for my money. And, like, before his match, he comes out and goes, listen, lads, need a big fucking pop tonight, all right? The biggest one you can give me. Like, seriously, babies in the air. Start hammering on the ring mat. He goes, pop for me like you would have done for Hogan before you found out he was a racist.
Oh, that's great.
And he's fucking hilarious. He always, like, his whole gimmick is he's kind of like David Brent from The Office, where he just says things that are completely offensive. Mm-hmm. And like, there's these shows called Defiant, and they're all women shows. And he was, there's this video where he's backstage with the promoter, and he's there going, "Oh, you're on." He goes, "Oh, there he is on the Escorts website, probably booking the next Defiant show." And then he just turns to the camera and goes, "Edit that out now. Edit that out. That's not on." So every time, like, he fucks up in a match, he turns to the cameraman and he goes, "Edit that. All right, that needs to go."
That's great. But,
he's fucking, he's tremendous.
What's his name? But,
you can find him under the name Be Cool or Barry Nasty. But he's so fucking funny.
Nice.
And, like, the best stuff is, like, videos that he puts out on Twitter where it's just him, like, just being a prick and trying to get a title shot. And I'm hoping that he does. Like, because David Starr is the... Like, David Starr is one of the most interesting people in wrestling, because he's, like... I don't know how to describe him. He's trying to start a union in real life for pro wrestlers.
Nice.
But he's using that as a gimmick where he's half loved by the crowd and half hated by the crowd.
Yeah.
And he's half hated by the crowd because he used to be a heel for the most part. But he's very interesting. I'll pay to see David Starr wrestle any day of the week because the dude fucking always works hard. Like, I've never seen a match with him where he didn't deliver 100%. And he's kind of blurring the lines between fact and fiction. And, like, I've seen him being interviewed on TV where he's talking openly about how he doesn't want to work for WWE, but he wants to make sure that the guys who do work for WWE get paid fairly and get their health care covered and all this. And he's trying to do something, and he's... I think the reason that it's working is that he is the kind of guy who should be signed, but he isn't.
Yeah.
As a statement, almost, where he's there going, I could sign the contract, or I could try and make a difference to make the sport better for everybody.
Yeah, he's got integrity, we call that.
But he's also, he's such a shill when he's, because he's very righteous in his, like, statements and all that.
Yeah.
And but in the ring, he'll always cheat. And he'll always come across him and be like, listen, so, like, you gotta stomp on, what was it? He says, you can't start a revolution wearing silk gloves. You have to step on some flowers to get to the goal. And it's just, it's really interesting because you don't know what's real and what's fake with him, you know?
Yeah, because he lives it. That's dope.
I was going to say, hopefully he doesn't become the Jimmy Hoffa of wrestling. Yeah. Where he starts the union and ultimately becomes incredibly corrupt.
Go watch The Irishman.
He's an interesting guy. Especially as, like, he's this, I don't know, he lives in Europe and has weird thoughts about how things work here. Like, he's funny to follow on Twitter, but he's also a fucking bit of a fucking, you know, overkill on there. But I would recommend checking him out. He's unique. There's nobody like him. Everybody, like, I'd say 80% of the audience in Ireland loves him because he had a match with Walter. Where Walter was the WWE UK champion, and he took the UK belt, which was previously, like, almost kept behind lock and key when it was in the building, and he grabbed it, threw it in the fucking crowd.
Oh my god!
And called Walter a piece of shit and a sellout. Mm. Fucking it! That was one of the best moments of the year, because that was, like, genuinely, you're just like, oh, I guarantee they didn't get permission to do this.
No.
Because as far as I can tell, him and Walter are friends. And Walter doesn't fucking care about... Like, he can walk out the building tomorrow and get a bigger contract from anybody else if WWE want to fire him.
Yeah.
And David Starr doesn't want to get hired by WWE, so they're just kind of like, fuck it, let's just go for it.
Yeah, that's like some old, that's some old attitude era shit.
But what I heard was WWE wouldn't have been annoyed if we hadn't have fucking cheered. Apparently they would have been okay with it, but we all acted like it was the best thing we'd ever seen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what their Thanksgiving was just last week of recording this, mm-hmm. and it was also my sibling's birthday, and I went to their house for it with their fiance, And part of the thing was, it was their birthday. They got to watch as much wrestling as they wanted to.
Hey, that sounds all right, man.
Yeah, so literally my whole Thanksgiving was, like, sitting in, like, you know how every, like, living room has the chair? Like, that's the chair.
Like
the dad chair or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I had the chair just all day as, like, my sibling had AEW on. So we watched, like, that week's episode, and then we watched Survivor Series. At least most of it. I got to the Lesnar Mysterio match, and it was like mid, like 11 p.m. And I was like, "All right, it's time for me to get out of here. I don't need to see this match." But I did get to see Walter, which it's so sad to see the. I mean, it's great that they're on TV, and I'm sure they're getting a nice paycheck. But like, he just got like put out like super quick because they have to keep him looking intimidating still. TV roster, so it was kind of like he was put away pretty quick in their match. Sadly, but. It was it was in Chicago, so like they were a very indie kind of crowd, you know. They were cheering all of like the NXT guys mostly, and it was a good show from everything I watched. Like, so I didn't see, you know, Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch sounds like a Disney version of some sort of horror movie made into a kid's show.
Yeah, she's like a fucking lich who, I don't know,
wears lipstick. Yeah, I don't know.
Dude, put her. They got to team her up with the Fiend, Becky Lynch and the Fiend.
Oh, don't tag her with that fucking dead weight.
I don't know, dude. Apparently, that like gimmick is like super hot.
I really loved the segments they did where Bray Wyatt was talking about why he is the way he is. And all the, it was really good. And then I saw that fucking Hell in a Cell match, and I was there going, back to New Japan.
His match with D-Bry was good. It was a good match.
If you can't have a good match with Daniel Bryan, you might as well get out of the wrestling business.
Yeah, exactly. You might as well give up if you can't have a match with that guy. But it was good because Daniel Bryan had some stakes in it, and like. I'm watching it with the younger people, and I'm like, they have desperately been looking for years for someone to replace The Undertaker or Kane, a mythical style wrestler who can do all these crazy things, and like with the Fiend match always being under those red lights, like I kind of like that. It reminded me of Mandy, so I'm like, I feel like I'm watching like Mandy as a wrestling match with like this hard red lighting. But it adds to the mystique of the character. Like, they want it really bad, and if they have to go as far as they're going with it, like, why not? You know, like, you might as well go for it. And he's doing Undertaker-style, like, get-ups, you know, like, ha-ha, you didn't get me. You just can't stop me. Like, and it's good. They need that kind of character, I think. So,
I hope for the best at all times for WWE. I genuinely want them to have a great product. I just don't have time in my life to watch it.
Yeah,
you know,
no, like, dude, there's too much better wrestling. I don't even want to say good wrestling. Like, there's just better wrestling to watch.
Like, for me, I watch New Japan, AEW, I go to every OTT show, I watch MLW, and I start watching the NWA show as well. And, like, I just start going, that's too much. That's too much. Yeah. And
that's a lot. That's a fucking ton of shit, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's just like, that NWA show, though, is bizarre. Like, funny enough, I started watching it after there was a big controversy on it with Jim Cornette being a fucking shithead. And the sad thing, Jim Cornette is an incredibly talented wrestling orator, but Jim Cornette is also a fucking idiot. And, I started going through everything that, in my head, I was going through every company he ever worked for. I was going, he's never left anywhere on good terms.
Nope.
And, but again, he's fucking really talented. But the NWA show is bizarre because it's 1985 Crockett television in HD. Like, the old 1985 NWA ring mats, the sets, everything has been recreated, but it's in HD. And it's weird.
Yeah, I hear it's good. I hear it's really good. Our good buddy Winthrop recommended it to me.
That's the thing. It is good. It's really easy to watch. The matches are good. Promos are really good. Eddie Kingston's on there.
Oh, shit.
Cole Cabana's on there. It's a good It's a good show. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and he's getting a little more spotlight now because he's doing stuff with Evolve, and they've been doing stuff with NXT, so it's pretty cool.
I'd like to see him actually get a go in Japan, like a proper go over there.
Oh, God, he'd be he should just get over there and join Suzuki-Goon.
Yeah,
it would be perfect.
Actually, funny enough, there's a wrestler called Mao on that show I was at there the other day, and everyone was chanting for him, and I just went, oh, that's better.
It took me a second.
I was like, well, might want to fucking wind that one back.
Little red cookbook. Like, yeah.
But I bought one of his t-shirts, actually. It's that t-shirt I sent you guys the photo of with the cats on it. And it was funny. Like, he came out, and he's in this five-way match, and, like, everybody's doing all this stuff. And then he just starts kissing his opponent. I will say, they did it too much. Like, they kissed each other, like, 15 times in the match.
Right, right. They were going for the more we do it, the funnier it gets. Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? If he had just done it, like, three times, it would have been way more over.
Yeah, three's magic number.
It would have been funnier. But, he's a nice kid. I bought the t-shirt off him. Like, whenever I see, like, young people who are talented, I'm just there going, okay, you've earned the t-shirt money. On you go.
Oh, yeah, and, I did that at when I went to Chikara and saw these guys called the Beach Bums wrestle. Like, I don't even know if they wrestle anymore, but, like, they were really good young dudes doing, like, a surfer gimmick. So I was like, I need that shirt that has a peach on it that looks like a butt. Like, I'm there for it.
I saw those two in Rhode Island. Yeah,
they're pretty good. Yeah. They're not bad.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the one guy left and, like, the one dude was doing just his own thing. Like, the skinnier guy, like, had to wrestle by himself or something, so.
I'm trying to think of where I saw them.
Panda and Fenix are the only two guys out there not sent t-shirts, and I was there going, it must be nice to have that TV money.
Yeah.
Don't gotta sell the gimmicks anymore.
God, his Lucha Bros are great, man. They're really good.
It's nice to know you don't have to push your own. It's gotta be nice to know that after how many fucking years you don't have to push your own merch, that the company's taking care of that for you, and it's like, damn.
From what I know, the two of them were, like, essentially orphans by the time they were teenagers. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, out on the street selling bootleg merchandise outside of Arena Mexico, just begging that they'd have enough money to, like, afford to live somewhere. And it's just like, yeah, 20 years later, so they're going, I don't think they're fucking short of any money or anywhere to live. And it's like, that's why they're so driven, I think. Because they're just like, gotta keep the fucking wolf away from the door.
I mean, and granted, I understand that, you know, like, interviews and shit, you know, be damned. They know that they're being on camera and stuff. But if you ever see them out of character, like, just out and about, they seem like the most humble fucking people in the damn world.
Oh, you'd have to be
too.
Growing up like that, man. Like, if you don't get out of that.
Or the complete opposite.
Yeah, or you're the opposite. Like, either you turn into a shithead or you retain that humbleness.
I love, though, in pro wrestling in particular, where, like, people will come from Mexico, people will come from other countries, and they'll come to English people, and they'll just cut promos in their own languages, and everyone just kind of goes along with it, even though nobody fucking understands a word. Like, I've ever seen Okada give a speech in London, and he's speaking in Japanese, and then he just goes, oh, wait, you don't know what I'm saying? And, like, everyone just kind of went with it, though, because you're just like, look, we trust you, Okada. I'm sure you weren't, like, genuine to being a dick.
You can tell by their cadence. It's wrestling, you know?
But that's it. Like, I've watched... Like, you watch guys speak, and you're just going, I get what you mean. I understand, you know... I get the basic gist, all right? You're not smiling and going, oh, Heil Hitler.
Me and my buddy Josh said this about Pentagon fucking 4 years ago. I know he speaks fluent English. Never speak English while wearing the mask, ever. I never, ever want to hear you speak English ever while you're in character. Because, like, the Spanish is too fucking good. Like, it's perfect for the character. Like, never, ever break that.
Because him and La Parca and all those guys, they have that weird kind of Mexican death Catholicism look to them.
Mm-hmm.
Where, LA Parca cut a promo on Jacob Fatu heading into the MLW pay-per-view, and I loved it, just because he was there going, Jacob Fatu, I'm going to break your fucking face, motherfucker. And I loved how it was just there going, He's like, I'm always, he said, he goes, oh yeah, I'm going to take that belt, I'm going to bring it back to fucking Mexico and it'll never be seen again. And I just love the idea he's going to claim it and then just like bury it in the Yucatan Mountains. actually, Keith, as I was saying, I was playing Yakuza 6.
Yeah.
And I hooked back up with a fucking Pocket Circuit Fighter.
Right? Isn't he living the life?
I think he
life,
might be
huh?
my favorite character.
He's so
the
great.
Poor bastard with his fucking horrible life.
Yeah.
But I love though how that's how he turned out. You know, and then like when you help him get his kind of spirit back, he immediately like starts talking like he did in the '80s.
It's the best, dude. It's I was so thankful to have played Zero and Kiwami before I played Six. Like so glad I did.
He's just I don't know, I just loved that he was in there. And, like, the way they did that. And, like, it's funny, though, how he's aged appropriately.
Yeah.
Kiryu's aged 2 years.
And he points it out. He's even like, God, you look great. Like, and, like, he's just an old fucking miserable man with, like, a mean wife. Like,
it's the soul of a dragon, man. Except the soul of the dragon. He ages much slower.
Well, especially when he killed Ryuji. Like, I mean, because then you get double dragon.
That's Kiwami. That's two, right?
Yeah.
I haven't played through it yet, but I'm like, yeah, I know the whole conflict is that there's this other dragon guy who you run into in Zero. You run into him in Zero, and you're like, God, that guy's huge. He's going to be dangerous one day.
Yeah, that's Ryuji.
Yeah.
But he's the Omi Alliance dragon. Yeah. But I'm playing through it at the moment, and there's little things I love about it. Six, obviously, because of Six. Like, I love the fact that there's that bar where Kiryu has age-appropriate friends. Like, he's just hanging out with old men in the bar. And I start going, yeah, I kind of just want this for Kiryu. I kind of want him to just kind of hang out with his mates and just kind of chill, you know?
Yeah, I love that enough whole little fishing town.
Enough of these fucking people and their fucking, you know, fucking Toto Clan, Omi Alliance nonsense. Like, but I don't know. I'm going to power through it.
You should. Dude, it's so you got to meet, like, the little gang in the fishing town and everything.
Oh, yeah, with fucking Takeshi Kitano as the leader. And,
yeah.
Like, I just played through a bit there where, like, you know, where they put the ski masks on and storm the hotel?
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, Kitano is showing them how to use the masks. And then you just see there's, like, a serious conversation in the background. He's wrestling one of the guys, and he's got him in a Boston Crab.
Dude, it's that whole, I love them. Like, they are, that whole crew are so endearing. Like, for being, like, Yakuza, but they're just literally, like, they're like suburban Yakuza, you know? Like, they're just this tiny little group in a town with nothing to do who suddenly have, like, Kiryu show up and a baby and, like, their whole life is turned upside down. But it was just waiting to be turned upside down, basically.
It's just a great, it's probably my favorite video game series, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like, great, it is, yeah, I hope to someday play through all of them.
I've played all of them, and I've loved all of them, you know. I love how the second one, though, like, I love how they, as Scott pointed out to me one time, he said, what's great about the Yakuza series is the things that they let you in on about Japanese culture that they think is normal. And, like, what's great about the second one in particular is that the moral of the story is don't trust Koreans.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of that even in, like, is it in Zero or One? There's still a lot of that too.
The triads are in the first one, so
right. So it's the Chinese. Don't trust the Chinese.
The snake flower triads.
Yeah.
But they're kind of just a second tier gang. Really, it's all about fucking what's his name, Nishiki, in the first one.
Oh yeah, Nishiyama. Fucking little shithead. What a great friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Kiryu wasn't there to guide him. Kiryu took the fall, and, you know, Nishiyama just turned into a worse guy in the end.
Yeah, well, you know. Maybe fucking Majima should have just thrown him in.
probably. He probably should have just fucking killed. Like, as crazy as Majima is, like, he's still better than Nishiki in the end.
Like, I love, like, the little, like, Date is one of my favorite characters in there. Like, I love the interrelationships where you're just like, wow, these are relationships that have been enriched over years and years, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, when you go back to Serena and you talk to the woman behind the bar, And you're like, yeah, she's known Kiryu since he was 20. Like, you get the feeling of time passing.
Yep.
And when I arrived back in Kamurocho, I remember running around it and just going, whoa, they changed stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd never felt like that before, like, about a video game, where, like, I felt that kind of, you know, when you go back to your hometown and they put in a new fucking swimming pool or something, you're like, where did that come from? And it's,
yeah, and you can't go to the call club anymore because it's not there, you know. I get
to
it.
To be fair, that was obviously going to die a death.
Yeah. But you have a cat cafe, so, like, fuck it. It's even better now.
I actually didn't get to that. I'm just about to head back to Kamurocho.
Nice.
Now, so I'll get all that other stuff done.
Yeah, and the cat cafe is really awesome. And I think it is around where the call place used to be. I think it's, like, near that, like, eastern side of the map. I think it's over there. You have to find it. I don't think it's, like, a mission. It's, like, you just find it and then discover that they'll, like, take in any cats you find, and then you start finding them.
I always appreciate, though, how Kiryu will, like, in the call center or whatever it was, and, you know, all these other places. And, like, he'll hook up with women he's not attracted to, but he'll still fuck him because he's polite.
Yeah.
You know? And, he'll come away from just going, oh, God, I shouldn't have done that.
I still think my favorite thing in all of Yakuza, I think it's in it's in Kiwami 1 or 0 where you manage the nightclub and there's a side mission where you run into the old lady with the purple hair and she's like crazy. Like she's got like purple hair and she's got like leopard print on. I can't remember what the Japanese term is for what that kind of like old lady is. There's a word for it.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's like Obajan, something like that. And like she keeps getting like Kiryu into trouble with like acting like she cut him in line somewhere to get ahead of him and get takoyaki before him and then they run out and stuff and like she keeps being a problem until the point she tries that against the wrong person. Kiryu's there and Kiryu steps in and kicks their ass obviously because they're about to harm an old lady, which Kiryu never did in the process of like her pissing him off because he's a fucking stand up guy. And eventually when you run the nightclub and you finish all those missions, she comes and helps you and becomes one of your ladies at the nightclub, and the thing is like she doesn't have the best looks and stuff, but her talk skill is through the fucking roof. So if somebody wants if someone wants to come in and chat with someone, you pick her and she's the best.
It's Zero.
Yeah, that's Zero. Oh, that's Zero. Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. And then you end Obitarian up getting
Obitarian.
Yeah.
Is the name that they come up with.
Yeah, yeah, and then
she's trying to hustle Majima for money.
Oh, it's Majima. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's just like, why don't you fuck off?
Yeah, oh, it's so good. I love all it. So not Kiryu, but Majima still being a guy who's not going to hurt an old lady, you know. Will defend her in the end.
He does beat up a bunch of people as a result, though. The weird thing is, I would have
that's
a hard
every
time
mission. It's like, it ends up, like, sometimes it'll start off innocent, but you just always end up kicking someone's ass. And that's what makes Yakuza fucking great. It's like,
well,
it is,
sometimes you end up fucking fighting a giant squid.
I haven't gotten there yet, and I need to play Kiwami too so I can fight Tigers.
Well, the squids are in the fishing stuff in Onomichi. There's the fishing mission, the fishing missions.
Oh, I may have never did it.
Yeah, it's there's like a pro baseball player you need for your team, and you gotta kill the delicious octopus, which is like 500 feet tall.
Oh, I don't think I ever did that. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's kind of like an on-rail shooter kind of section.
Okay, I don't think I ever did that. Like, there's so much in those games. You can, like, miss so much. And a lot of times I was playing it with friends, so we were just kind of trying to get through the story and, like, see the story together. That there wasn't a lot of, like, fucking around going on a lot of the time.
The meat of those games for me is the sub-stories and all the little side shit that you do. I just love spending time on that stuff. I don't know why, but I find it very satisfying.
Because it's rich and really good storytelling and fun. Like, it's, yes, I mean, it's, that game dies on its extras, you know what I mean?
Oh, dude, yeah. Still, one of my other favorite missions beyond the old lady thing in Zero is in Zero or Kiwami 1, once again, I can't remember, where the little girl wants the toys out of the crane game. And you keep winning them for her, and it's because she doesn't act. You find out it's because like her dad got in trouble with guys and stuff like that, and like like you're being nice to her, and then these guys think it's creepy or something, and you end up beating them up, or they want money from the mom because the dad was bad, and then you end up beating them. It's great. It's like three separate side missions that eventually do end with you kicking some guys, a group of guys' asses to help this little girl after winning her prize.
One of the first missions in Zero is you reunite this 8-year-old with his estranged father over the shared love of Dragon's Quest.
And
how that happens is Kiryu beats the living fuck out of 12 people, including the father, and then by so teaching the father a lesson of, I guess you just had to get your ass kicked to realize that the love of your son is all you actually needed. Like, there's a certain, shall we say, culture shock to it, which, again, like, going by, like, Mini said all those years ago, I'm sure is, like, a trope in, you know, Eastern media, but to us, it's just like, wow, that just happened. Like, that, wow.
Kiryu, okay. It's fun. He's one of those characters in all those weird little memes where it's all like, oh, you say masculinity is toxic, and it's like Mr. Rogers and Bob Ross and LeVar Burton. Like, Kiryu should be on there. Like, he is the ultimate positive masculinity symbol.
Ultimate. He is the ultimate male. I mean, he really...
And he's not an asshole. He never uses his strength to put anybody weaker down. He only, he's a perfect fucking gentleman most times. Like John even said, he'll fuck a girl he doesn't even want to. Because
because he's considering her feelings.
Yeah.
Like, he's being a champ. Like,
he's the ultimate, fuck toxic masculinity. He is the positive masculinity.
Well, he's great. He doesn't have ego, all right?
Exactly.
That's what makes a great character, right? And I pointed this out about, like, poorly written characters and well-written characters. And if you want to see a well-written know-it-all, you just got to look at Star Trek The Next Generation.
I knew it. I fucking knew this was coming.
But you know what I mean? Because Picard is the ultimate know-it-all, but he's not a cunt about it, you know? And like, that's the thing that I think you see in a lot of lazy writing now, is where people almost have these anime internal monologues where they talk about how fucking strong and smart they are. And you're just there going like, to go back to Yakuza 6, it's like fucking Kazuchika Okada, okay? He is the best fucking wrestler in the world. He doesn't have to say it, all right? Mm-hmm. He goes out there every night and kicks the fucking ass of the job he does, and he's the best in the world at it. And people say he's the best. But Okada is like Captain Picard. He's not a fucking egomaniac. And he doesn't need you to suck his dick. He probably have 700 people better looking than you do it for him. And,
and better at it.
Yeah. And, like, he's just there going... Like, again, he's just not that guy. He's, like... I've met so many fucking dickheads in wrestling who were, like, complete egomaniacs. And none of them were even a smidgen as good as Okada.
Dude, humble as his speech was at fucking MSG, you know, like,
but like
after winning that fucking belt, like, just, he was amazing.
That's who he is. He's just a sweet guy. Like, he's
but he's also the Rainmaker. Like, that's like, but he doesn't need to show it off. Like, he just is, you know?
I used to joke that he is a real life Yakuza character, and then he became one. Because, like, he actually has a charity called the Rainmaker Foundation for Orphans.
Aww. And, so, he is Kiryu, because I'm Kiryu, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Except that he's just a normal guy who happens to be the best fucking wrestler in the world.
And how
told
can
you
he
that...
not play Yakuza if he's in it now? Like, you know he plays it.
Oh, definitely. Like, I'm sure they all do.
Yeah.
Toriyano
in that game. Oh, I love it. I love that he's
He's all jacked.
He's all jacked and bragged. Oh, he's so great. I love him.
I've been watching any of his matches in the tag league, but him and Cabana are a tag team in there.
I've been watching their promos, like, after matches and stuff. They've been doing this whole thing where Yano's speaking in English and Colt's speaking in Japanese, and they're both fucking horrible at it. So they come back and do promos where, like, Yano's just like, wow, and Colt's just going, sugoi, sugoi, sugoi. like over and over, and then they just walk away. Like, it's so good. Or like them just saying buy our merch. Like, it's fucking great. Like, I don't even need to see the matches. I'm just watching the promos they're doing on YouTube. It's great.
They had a match.
They're meant to be a tag team. Like, when I was really hoping they were going to come this year and be in the Tag World Grand Prix together. Like, it seemed like it was something they were setting up, even at the MSG show where they switched places.
They had a match in Corican Hall earlier on this year that has to be, like, you need to see. Just because it was 100% comedy right to the end. But it was weird how it actually worked as a match as well. Like, they built it to a climax, and the crowd went nuts for Cabana the whole way through.
Oh, they love him, man. They fucking love him.
And weirdly enough, they got his finisher over, that Superman pinning thing. That is an over finisher in New Japan.
Nice.
And you watch it and you go, like, they even get the comedy guys over. Yeah. Like with Yano, the trick is, they're just like, yeah, he is what he is, but he could probably beat anybody on any given night if he get. Like, I remember when he pinned Naito in the G1, I jumped out of my fucking chair. I was like, fucking yeah.
That's a big deal, man.
And then he beat Jay White as well, and you're just there going, this guy, he beats all the main eventers. And it makes sense, because he's just like, it's him just fucking around. And like, that's what I remember he lost to Ishii, because Ishii would just stand in the middle of the ring and be like, I'm not doing this with you. Like, come back in the ring and fight me.
Yeah, like, he's like, I'm not playing along. Like, I will not fall for your fucking tricks.
And like, Yano would run out of the ring and start throwing chairs around, and Ishii just wouldn't budge. He's like, no, it's not gonna happen this time. But one of my favorite Yano matches ever is the one with Kenny Omega from the G1 in 2018, where he taped a young lion to Kenny's arm and then picked him up like he was a dead body and threw him over the barricade. So Kenny would have to drag this guy to get back to the ring before the 20 count ended. The way he did it, though, like, the young lion guy just played dead the whole time, and it literally looked like he dumped a dead body over the rail. That's so fucking funny.
Wrestling's so good.
It's I don't know. Like, when it's done right, it's the best.
Comedy wrestling is just, I feel like it's something that's getting more recognition now, especially when you got, like, Orange Cassidy as over as he fucking is right now in AEW and everything, like, him in a fucking turkey costume on Thanksgiving. It's fucking, it's so good just to have this like spark of goofiness that I feel WWE, like, you know, if they try to do silly, it just comes off as like insipid. Gross or insipid, just like not like the, but while like now we get all these other people where it like you're not treating the crowd like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You gotta play it safe with him though, because if you put him on TV too much, and
it'll die fast.
It's funny. Like, I was watching an episode of AEW Dark the other day, and it was Dustin Rhodes and Sonny Kiss against, I can't remember who else. Who was the tag team? It was another tag team, and like it was like Kiss and the two other guys. They were all just so green in comparison to Dustin. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever Dustin would get in the ring, you're just going, oh my god, this man is so fucking smooth. Just look at the way he does moves. Look at everything he does. He's so talented. He's
been doing them so long.
But it's just like, you're like, yeah, there's, you can tell in that moment as they're going, there's a lot of people in this company. And it stuck out so much when watching Dustin, who's just, I mean, to be fair, he's going to make anybody look bad because he's so like naturally gifted as far as everything he does. It's so weird because he didn't wrestle like that when he was Goldust for the first few years. He was just like, hey, I'm Goldust, a bit of a perv, and I like kissing people, and I like gold.
He's an old boy now.
He was in the bathtub, but when he was in the bathtub, no one, like, no doubt said to himself, wait, should I fuck some gold?
Yeah! Should I fuck some gold? Probably did. I mean, like, it's, well, now he's an old boy, like, and he gets the kind of, like, you know, I don't mean to sound like this is a negative thing or something bad he's doing, but, like, his dad's passed on now, he's the older brother, he gets to kind of embrace that persona of his father now. You know what I mean? Like, now he gets to be...
He was always the best wrestler of the family. Like, he was always the best in-ring technician.
Yeah, and now he doesn't have to buy into a character, too. Like, he gets to be who he's always been, which is his father's son.
Yeah. And the one thing he definitely brought back from his dad's legacy this year was fucking gore.
Yeah.
He saw that match with Cody.
Yeah, they fucking bloody. Like, that was... And I don't like death matches. Like, even, like, the Moxley Omega match I didn't watch, and I don't think I will, just because I'm not into death match stuff.
But... Oh, for me, I just found that match kind of boring, personally, just because...
Yeah, so everybody was blowing up about it. I'm like, this isn't the match I want to see these guys have. Like, I just want them to have a wrestling match. Like, I just want Moxley versus Omega. Like, that's a great match. You don't need this death match gimmick. Like, Moxley's intimidating as shit.
The thing is, it was just... For me, I just felt like they were going from spot to spot to spot. And I prefer to see them in a G1-style fucking two guys... toe-to-toe, fighting it out style match.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, they were just like, okay, it's time to use the glass now.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, it's time to use the barbed wire now. Okay, it's time to use the thing now.
Yeah, and then you gotta have the announcers being like, where did that come from? What is, oh my, and you're like,
yeah,
I don't buy it.
But, I love a good brawl, and I love a good bloodbath as well. Like, LA Park versus Jacob Fatu and MLW, that I watched that the night before I watched the Moxley Omega match, and I was there going, that's the match that they should have had. Because Fatu and LA Park was two fat fuckers out there fucking throwing each other into stuff, throwing stuff at each other, and then doing top rope shit when you wouldn't expect them to, all the while blood spraying everywhere. And you're just there going, this is the fucking best. Like, it's a movie fight.
One of those fights I have seen that was a bit gory, but speaking of John Moxley, was Homicide versus Moxley. Where
was that in CCW?
I don't know if it was that or it was some North Jersey Fed. He fucking Homicide just beats the shit. I think it was Evolve, actually. I think it's an early Evolve match. And Homicide just beats the living shit out of Moxley with, like, everything. But Moxley just keeps coming back. Like, he just keeps coming back for more abuse, and it's oh god, it's fucking brutal.
Yeah, I think
DVD somewhere. It was like Evolve like 2 or 3, where like they had figured out they wanted to do the win loss things, but they didn't really have a steady roster yet, so it was just like, yeah. Homicide versus Moxley, why not? Like,
I said before, I'm a fan. I think blood has a place in wrestling. I just don't think you should do it every week.
No.
I think for big matches, not all of them need blood, but blood helps some of them. And like, I completely understand if there's like a young wrestling fan who's like 17 years old, grew up in the in the era of no blading, and just kind of going, "That's barbaric. That's fucking disgusting. You shouldn't be asking wrestlers to cut themselves." But I'm there going, I get that. However, I've seen matches where I'm there going, "This is good." But a little bit of blood would put it over the top.
Sometimes, no, there's definitely some moments where, like, I've seen matches where I'm like, oh, he's going to bleed from that. They're setting this up. And then, like, it doesn't happen. So, like, I get that, too. I'm just not for the glass tubes and all sorts of
That's just cheap heat. Like, anybody
with
that. Nobody, like, blood and weapons and all that. Like, the Park Fatu match, that was a great match because it was two big fucking burly fuckers who were just going to tear into each other and have a match, but it was bloody and brawly as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I dig that more than a, like, let's get all the weapons out.
Yeah, yeah. And like, LA Park,
as much as New Jack is the greatest wrestler of all time as well, you know, so.
But, like, LA Park is 55, and he did, like, a springboard fucking twisting corkscrew splash in that match.
Jesus.
And he did one move like that, and it meant so much because it came 20 minutes in, and you're going, this is why he's a big deal, because he knows when to make thing that make, he knows when to place the move, he knows where to put it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, as someone pointed out, it was like, LA Park can wrestle still, because the majority of his matches are standing in one spot and firing chops and punches. Like, you know, you can do that. You don't need to run for that.
Yeah.
You don't need working knees. But it's on top of that, he's still La Parker from WCW. He still does the dancing and the chair stuff.
I love him.
You
know? Chairman and, of WCW, baby.
And like, it's funny because he's outlasted like two other La Parkas, and his son is El Hijo del LA Park, and then there's Super Parka and all these other guys, and he's just like, but he's still the man. And there's a documentary actually about the Exoticos in Mexico, and they're kind of like, I don't know how to describe the Exoticos. They're essentially kind of like drag queen wrestlers.
Well, yeah, isn't that what's his name? I can't think of their name. Who's
got Cassandro? Big...
Yes, thank you, Cassandro. Yeah. Yes.
But like some of the wrestlers in Mexico are Exoticos or trans. Some of them aren't. It's kind of a weird kind of thing. There's not one hard fast rule to it.
No,
but,
and that's the whole thing. There is no hard fast rule in general. I was having that discussion about.
But there's the documentary follows these two. Like gay rights activists, and they're going to a match to see Exoticos wrestle for the first time. And it's funny because they're watching it, and they're going, "Yeah, I don't know anything about wrestling. I don't care about wrestling." And then they're sitting in the opening match, and someone goes, "And up next, it's La Parka," and like one of the gay activists who's like says, "I never watched wrestling." He's like, "Fuck La Parka." I was there going, you've just fucking let yourself go there.
Yeah, Bob. You watched WCW in high school, young man.
And don't get me wrong, if I was there, I'd be right next to you going, yeah. Fucking hell, what dude, a great night.
Dude, he was my favorite. I loved him when I was in high school. And in our WCW NWO revenge fed, I was the cruiserweight champion as La Parka. And used to steadily beat the shit out of my buddy's Rey Mysterio Like, he would beat the shit out of me, and then I'd pull off, like, La Parka special or some dumb move and would just win. Like, La Parka's badass in that game. And, like, I would just beat him constantly, but then, like, always would lose to my buddy as my Booker T of the head of Red and Black NWO to his Hulk Hogan, the head of Black and White NWO. I would beat the shit out of him the whole match. He'd drop two legs on me and pin me, and it was like a real Hogan match, and I would just lose. And I was like, this game knows! Like, god damn it!
It's, I don't know. I remember talking about Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat recently. And I said, if you want to know how great Booker T was, go watch a Stevie Ray singles match. And then remind yourself that Harlem Heat were considered a great tag team.
Yeah, they were my favorite. They were my favorite tag team in WCW. And then when Booker got his solo run and his TV title run, like, he was my favorite.
They take what they want, all right?
Yeah.
That's one of the greatest moments in TV history. Fucking, oh, what a... I feel bad for Booker T.
The shame on his face after is, like, the best thing in the world. He's fucking, like, oh, my God.
He's still ashamed about it. Like, I've heard him. He was on with Steve Austin, and he talked about it. He's there going, yeah, I don't like that clip. And he got into it for his own personal reasons. But I was there going, yeah, but it's still really funny.
It's hilarious.
Too bad it's fantastic, like, because like it'll never go away.
If you can't play that phrase back in your head and not, like, still think it's funny, like, I'm sorry. Like, it's funny. It's so, oh my God.
You can
God.
See how much of a pro Mean Gene is in that clip.
Yes! No, he doesn't flinch. Mean Gene doesn't even flinch and just goes right, whoa, Stevie Ray! You know, like, and then, like, it's so... We coming for you! Like, it's so... Oh, my God. I could just play it in my head, and it brings me, like, so much, like, joy that I hope Booker T doesn't mind too much. Like, is it just really...
That promo and the Bret Hart one, the Who Are You to El Dandy, those are two of the classic WCW ones, where he's just like, Bret's like, El Dandy, you're a fucking stand-up guy, and you're a hell of a wrestler, and I'll wrestle you any day of the week. And me and Gene is there going... El Dandy is in the cruiserweight division, and Brad's there going, "Hey, he's a great wrestler, Gene." Okay, he's like, and he goes, "Who are you to doubt El Dandy?" Okay, and fucking Gene doesn't even flinch. There's not a register on him. He's just disgusted with Brad. And I love the fact Dean like goes out with like a back injury or whatever, and Brad's there going, "Oh yeah, with his phony injury, Dean Malenko. I've got a groin pull the likes of which you've never seen."
Fred Hart is so good, man. Like, I always imagined him to be a real asshole, like, even after reading his book and meeting him. Like, what a wrestler back then, man. Shit.
Oh, he's a fucking man. There's no two ways about it.
Could tell a fucking story like no other in the fucking squared circle. Welcome to the wrestling podcast.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I mean, we have just come up with some other topics then.
I saw Knives Out.
Oh, don't talk about it. I'm going to go see it tomorrow. Sorry.
I don't want to. That's the whole thing. If nobody's seen it, we're not going to talk about it.
Talk about something else. Talk about something else. Well, I'll tell you this. Shut up.
Yeah, I got to see it. It's a fucking mystery movie.
And
now.
It is. It's a murder mystery. So
I do want to see it.
It's great.
I have not seen it.
It subverts the murder mystery, and it's really, really good. Like, Rian Johnson, for someone who will go down in history as the man who ruined Star Wars or whatever, he's a great writer-director. Like, he's one of the new greats. Like, he is one of these dudes that I admire. Like, I put him in my category of all these new greats. You know, we've got Robert Eggers, we've got Edgar Wright, we've got Wes Anderson, we've got Rian Johnson now. Like, we've got all these really great younger directors. Like, Wes Anderson's not super young. I mean, he's been doing shit since the late 90s, early 2000s. But we have a lot of great new directors. And they're doing a lot of stuff that I don't think would get a lot of main time airplay. Like, a murder mystery. Like, a lot of it's from...
And thankfully, Keith, they're all men.
I realized that as I was listing it. I'm like, I have no female directors on this list.
The fear is over, boys. They didn't take over. We're okay.
Yeah, I mean...
That's not my fault. That's Hollywood's fault, okay? That is not my fault.
I loved Wonder Woman, okay, John?
A woman directed that, right?
I remember Elizabeth Banks lost her shit over, like, her Charlie's Angels remake failing. Recently.
Really? She did? I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. She was like saying, yeah, well, it's all fucking men's fault because they didn't go see the movie. And you're just there going, listen, one, nobody cares about Charlie's Angels. Nobody's going to see that fucking movie.
No, you should have just billed it as a spy movie. Like, you could have just billed it as a super spy movie. It's the same problem with the new Ghostbusters. You could have just made a fucking fun movie about women who haunt ghosts that isn't Ghostbusters, and it would have done great, probably.
But here's the thing. Women didn't go see it either, all right?
Yeah.
Second of all, that Wonder Woman movie, that was a hit. But third of all, I'm there going, why don't you just remake Bloodsport with women in it, all right? Because that's the movie I want to see. Get fucking...
Hey, Ben!
Get Ronda Rousey to be in it.
Yeah!
Because, like, those are...
I got it. Here we go. Ready? So... Ronda Rousey in the part of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
The part of her friend, Awesome Kong.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good pick.
She's a great actress. You know, she is an actress.
And an active pro wrestler, so she could do all the stuff.
Yeah, let her be like the big friend, you know, who gets fucked up by Chong Li. And Chong Li is played by Asuka.
Aja Kong would be pretty good, Chong Li as well.
That's true, Aja Kong would as well.
She's getting on there, but still...
But, dude, wrestling fans, that they would flock to that fucking movie if, like, one of the main fights is Awesome Kong, Aja Kong.
Asuka would be a good pick because she's so fucking crazy.
Yeah, like, I think she has the look. Like, she has that... Like, Chong Li's not a... Like, he's a big, muscly dude, but he's not, like, huge.
No.
He's not a particularly tall fellow, you know? And Asuka, I think, has that intimidation factor. I think that would work really well.
I said to a friend of mine the other day, I was watching Asuka's YouTube channel where she... badly plays driving video games and makes Chanko in her back garden. And I was there going, I think my ideal life is being Asuka's house husband.
Yeah.
Like, I just love the idea of being married to her. And like, she's there going, all right, it's time for me to go on the road for 4 days. And I'm there going, see you later. I'll be back here at the gaff.
Bye, honey. Have a good trip.
And
you stream on her channel on her days away.
No, I'd be just like, I will, when she comes home, I'll fucking wash her gear for her straight away. I'll make her dinner. You know, she's bringing in all the money. I'll fucking look after her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a fucking hot piece of ass as well. So that's a bonus.
Yeah.
And then she fucks off on Monday and I'm there going, cool, she won't get weird with me coming and watching AEW. So it's
probably like, watch with you. Why not? Probably have some friends over there.
It's the perfect life. I want to be a I want to be a specific, like, as ideally I want to be a Japanese woman's wrestler's house husband, but I'll sell for any woman's wrestler's house husband, to be honest with you. I mean, just like, hey man, do you know fucking Tanahashi? Can he come over?
you're just making me think, Matt, are you with me on this? Thinking of the Clerks episode with where Randall has like the Japanese husband, like he ends up being like a housewife.
Yes.
Arigato, Toshiro-san.
Goodbye, Toshiro-san, wherever you are.
Oh, man, I'd be so happy. I'd be chatting to ask it. I'd be there going, listen, can the great Muda come over for dinner?
Because
she'd be wanting that as well, obviously, being a big Muda fan.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's sounds her like gimmick now. Isn't, like, she's basically the great Muda spraying people in the face?
Yeah.
Which was
really great to see her do that. Did she do that too? Did she do that to Charlotte Flair? Did she do it to Charlotte? I think that was great.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It sounds like a good life.
I agree. I'm gonna go. I'll go words lock down. I got Kyrie. I'll lock down Kyrie. You lock down Asuka.
Words of wisdom from Capcom. Being a sugar daddy is gonna be a good life. Well, no shit.
Having a sugar mama.
Oh, even better.
Being a sugar daddy.
I misspoke.
We'd have sugar
I don't know,
mamas.
That sounds like a pretty good life, too. I'm getting in on this,
I'm telling you, the Pirate Queen Kairi Sane, I'm coming along for the ride. They're
a tag
team.
Whatever she wanted to do whenever she came home. I'd be there going, you want to watch fucking Dawson's Creek or something? Fine.
Right? You're a Japanese woman who grew up in Japan, you want to watch Dawson's Creek?
I'm going to find it. Fucking, you want to watch Cowboy Bebop?
There you go. Do you want to watch Crayon Shin-chan? That's like the Simpsons of Japan, right?
No, the Simpsons are the Simpsons of Japan. Simpsons are everywhere, dude.
Oh, merch.
Have you ever heard Japanese Homer? It's pretty fucking hysterical.
Oh, it's great. No, it's great. I've been like on this.
I love the idea. She comes home and she's like, where the fuck is my Shonen Jump?
Yeah, she would, man. She'd be like, we got to watch the couple episodes of My Hero that just came out, man. Got to catch up.
I think I want to read this fucking trash. I'm like, here you go, right? Listen, when they start reprinting Tiger Mask, you let me know, okay?
Oh, Johnny, you should watch My Hero. The show's so good. I love it.
It's practically wrestling.
My Hero Academia? Just, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Because it is all about training, and it's about, like, living the gimmick of the hero when you're in the hero's uniform and shit.
It is the story of a young lion. The young lion is just trying to be an X-Man instead of a wrestler. Like, that is...
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yeah, if you look at All Might, All Might is his, you know, trainer and is his...
his idol. Like, yeah. Literally.
He literally passes the mantle on to him now to be
is
the
Is it
new...
one of those ones so where there's, like, 500 episodes?
No, it's just...
No,
at this point...
It's still airing. It's still new.
Yeah, they're on season 4?
Four,
they're like they're like 75 deep probably at this point.
Less,
because I don't know. I don't like that level of
commitment.
Yeah,
like, it is a bit to get into now. I got into it when it started as a show, so like I've been on the ride.
They're like 18 episode long seasons.
The early ones,
and they've just started. Go ahead.
I was gonna say you are right. It is. They're like shorter in the early seasons, and now they're just starting to be like 26.
Yeah, but there's also more story to tell now, like, and I've noticed that, I shit on a lot of anime, and if you want to poke holes in My Hero, it is very easy to, but for the same reason I like comic books, wrestling, and other assorted carny dumb shit, I am in it because some of the names and types of the wrestlers are so, I'm already fucking up, heroes, are some of the best carny level bullshit I have seen in a long while.
Oh, dude, I love it. One of my new favorite heroes, Fat Gum.
Fat Gum is good. Nothing will ever beat Best Genist.
That's the guy you told me about where he's like, his power is he can manipulate cotton.
He's denim kinetic.
Yeah.
He controls genes. Yeah. Not human... Not biological makeup, actual cotton spun into denim. That's the only substance he can fucking control. Mm-hmm. So he's got a ninja outfit that the mask is just a small set of fucking jeans with a zipper up the fucking mouth.
Yeah, and he wears like a full Canadian tuxedo and he can break it down to the threads and back again. And because this is like a superhero rich world where most people have a power, like they're super geniuses, so the jeans he has are like a super strength tensile denim.
So
he can wrap guys up in like all these threads of denim, but it subtracts from his outfit as he does it. Like, it's
some moron had to think of that. Like,
the guy who writes the manga, the mangaka who writes it. Like, he's fucking great.
Is it all him? Or has he got a team?
No, like, that's the whole kind of thing a lot of the times with Japanese manga, and why, like, it's a very hard job to have, because most time it's one creator who writes it and draws it. That's why it's in black and white, too. Like, they do it, you know, usually on their own. So a lot of this is just all... This is all him being a kid who grew up reading Dragon Ball Z and Naruto and Bleach, and then like, I'm going to do my own thing.
Clearly X-Men. And clearly fucking X-Men.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I've always said this too. Like,
what's the whole reason
I
All Might is drawn differently than everybody else? He has a, like, American thick line style to him as a hero to make him look more like an American hero, but he is Japanese.
The fact that All Might, the character, is actually Japanese, and like everyone else comments on, is like, really? Like that's an ongoing joke in the show. Like, the most Captain America looking motherfucker I've ever seen. What the fuck?
Well, for most of it, but, we get later on, and he can't really look like Captain America anymore.
Indeed, I'd say he gets better at some point, but that's beside the point. I've always said, like my favorite shit is, yeah, I don't know, I've never read the thing, but
just where we're at in the West, show.
East meets West, I've always enjoyed way more than just, either the West or the East trying to do what the other does. This is a very nice blending, and it is cornball as shit. But there's something to its goofiness that I truly enjoy. And also, the show never takes itself too fucking seriously. Like, I think it knows that it's halfway to a comedy and just kind of runs with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good funny moments. And so check this out, John. The plot of the new season that we're on right now. The whole plot is that, so they're at the point in their schooling where they go to a school where you learn to be a superhero or, like, assistant superhero or something. They have these work studies where they go out and work with different superhero agencies on the street, like on the beat, being superheroes. And they've gotten tied up into this plot where, so basically in this future where All Might existed, the ultimate hero, and all these other heroes, criminal organizations kind of like died off and vanished for a long time and became way more underground and secretive. And the villains of this season are the Chiha Saikai, which are a Yakuza group that still exist in this future, but they have powers and shit. And they are selling these bullets that contain a drug that can shut down people's powers.
Okay.
And selling drugs that can also enhance people's powers and make their powers, like, some people just have little dinky powers. Like, I can float anything that weighs up to 10 pounds.
Really, the show was a tad bit smarter than the average, like, Shonen Jump bullshit.
As American animation getting better. He grew up watching bullshit Japanese anime and went, I can do better than that, and did better in the same way guys like Genndy Tartakovsky watched Johnny Quest and said, why is this called an action show? This isn't an action show, and made Samurai Jack. And was like, this is a fucking action cartoon. Like, don't sell me bullshit. I can do better. And I feel like that's
my personal ideal anime to Mel at one time. And the title for it is called Bastard Express Unexpected Hero.
So shut up, you've already got me, you've already sold me.
Alright, and it's about fucking Takuma Shinoku, Minoru Suzuki, and Zack Sabre Jr. unexpectedly saving days. So, out of pure malice. Like, I just like the idea of Minoru Suzuki saving someone, in a typical superhero fashion, out of being either ornery or like just aggressive in some way.
Yeah, that's
It always ends with him like giving people pile drivers through different stuff.
Yeah, and helping them via it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like going, oh, Suzuki-san, you must have done this to help this old woman. He's like going, I don't fucking care about that old bitch. I just wanted to beat this guy up.
Yes. Yes, no, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's almost like it's one Punch Man's like a little bit of that kind of. That's awesome.
I feel like there's something
similar to that. I can't think of like that. That sounds like a familiar kind of like.
It's like kind of like I was just. It reminds me of this Judge Dredd comic that I read years ago that just killed me, where there's this old woman and she's wandering around Mega City 1, and she's getting into all sorts of trouble, and at the end of it, like Dredd stops her from being killed basically, and he tries to be nice to her, and he goes, "Well, sounds like somebody had a busy night," and she just kind of goes, "Sorry, I didn't hear that," and he has to repeat himself 2 or 3 times, just, "I'm sorry, I didn't hear that," and he goes, "Ah, fucking forget it," and he goes back to being a prick.
Oh, shit. Fuck, we need another Dredd movie.
But that's never going to happen.
Well, we don't really. We have a perfect one, so why do we really?
I was going to say, we have a perfect Dredd movie. And,
I'd love to see that. I'd like to see Dredd done as a TV show. There's so many characters that are, like, crazy in that world that you could do, like, a pretty good TV show based around Dredd, where he's, every week he's going after someone new.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and there's a lot of, like, the best thing about the Dredd series is, like, there's so much parody and satire in it, like, so there's tons that you could mess around with in Mega City 1 alone.
No, you know what I'd like to do? What I want from a Judge Dredd show is I want to hop in a time machine, go back to the 90s. I want to steal the crews that are working on, like, Eon Flux and the Max and bring them to the future with all the tech now and go, okay, now make a Judge Dredd show with what we have now. In your, like, crazy fucking, like, grim,
Jesus,
dark,
yeah, I was thinking animated
style. I'm thinking animated. Like, animated by those guys I think would be perfect.
It's I'd love to see more. I just think there's so much crazy stuff in the Dredd world that it'd be great to see it done. And, like, the Dredd movie, like, the one that we got, was tremendous. Like,
yeah.
What's the guy's name who played
Carl
him? Like, what was great about him was he just was like, "I'm not taking the helmet off." And
yeah.
That's the character. The character is the guy in the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And he also
lives the mask.
But he gave the "I am the law" speech and did it really well. Like, you know, where he's on the microphone and he's there going, like, "She is not the law around here." And he gets super angry. He goes, "I'm the fucking law." And I love the way he delivers it like that. It's like, "I'm annoyed that I have to tell you this."
Yeah.
And
do you see this helmet? It's Vader time.
But I love the fact that he never, like, he never picks up someone else's gun.
Nope.
I just appreciate that. He uses the one gun the whole way through the movie.
Then again, you know, if your gun did the shit that gun did, you wouldn't need another gun.
But, like, Judge Anderson was in it, and that was a character that, like, shouldn't be in modern stuff. Because, like, Judge Anderson was literally just, you know, the creators of 2008 going, "Oh, man, we should just put Pamela Anderson in our comics, because it's the early 90s.
And she's psychic."
And, yeah. Judge Anderson, DSI division. And she generally got trapped by Judge Death a lot. And that character works in that movie. Like,
she's
they
great in that
it
movie. As being like you are her in that movie. Like, you're just as, like, confused and like, "Who the fuck is this masked guy I've been fucking partnered with and have to go into this scary ass build?" Like, fuck. Like, yeah, you get to be her. I like that.
But Dredd never compromises his own stubbornness. And that's what makes that character work in that movie as well. Like, he is 100% fucking street fascist Judge Dredd.
Yeah, there's no dumb moment. What? Good, Matt.
John said it the best when we first saw this movie years ago. He's like, "It's great. It's 2 hours of solid action. It's The Raid. It's all done by the guys who made The Raid. Judge Dredd never takes off his helmet, and at the end, there has been no character development whatsoever." And
that's
then, boom, credit.
That's what I was about to say, Matt. Yeah, there's no moment where it's like, "Oh, maybe I just been a little too violent." Like, there's no moment where he self-reflects. And
he never questions himself.
No, he's not supposed to. He is
the law.
Yeah.
He's pure fascist, dude. Like, he is completely authoritative.
He's the only fun. He's the only fun pure fascist. I wanted to add on to your fascist. Like, he's the only fun one.
I mean, Look,
I don't want to run into Judge Dredd. He'd be like, you smell like weed, and he'd, like, blow my head off, and that would be the end of it.
Well, look, he is the ultimate symbol of authority in a world with no authority.
Yeah, he's what would happen if you gave the Punisher a badge. Like, that is essentially what Judge Dredd is.
You gave him a badge and the gun fucking Gary Oldman has in The Fifth Element, basically.
Yeah,
in a compact size.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Like,
I said,
like, just him screaming at the homeless old man at the beginning of the fucking movie is just the best. And then, you know, squish.
Well, I love how he's like, get the fuck out of here. No mercy.
Yeah.
He's like, vagrancy is a crime. Get out.
Yep.
And the door squashes him, and he, like, Trent just doesn't care.
Less paperwork. All right.
Yeah.
And, and just automatically, your sentence is death. And that's it, the whole... great. I love that character. That movie was killer as well. Weirdly enough, I remember getting into the comics because of the Stallone film in the 90s. Because, like, it was pushed so big that you were like, oh, all right, I've got to go read these. And just as, like, a 10-year-old, loving them because they were so fucking, like, crazy.
Oh, yeah, you had easier access to that stuff, too, definitely, being where you at.
Yeah. So they were kind of like the comics that were on the stands, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. 2000 AD wasn't, like, a thing over here, really. Is that what it's called, 2000 AD?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. And, like, there was always, like, five stories in 2000 AD. It was like a compilation, so...
It was, like, the Shonen Jump of Britain!
Basically. But it was, like, was it Sinister Dexter was one that was going on? That was kind of like a crime story set in kind of contemporary times.
Oh, I like the name.
Strontium Dog was one that was going on for years. It was like a sci-fi story. Slania, that's kind of the Celtic mythology one, where it's like fucking power metal, the comic.
I feel like such a basic bitch. Like when I was a kid, it was Spawn and Severus. Like, those were the two posters on every comic. Oh, yeah, I know, but it's like, I'm trying to think of, like, was there any, like, semi-indie or underground or not-so-well-known-off comic that I ever read? Nope. Like, Savage... Oh, go ahead.
Were you about to say Savage Dragon?
I was about to say Savage Dragon.
I was like, come on, man, you probably read Savage Dragon, and that was Image.
Image had its own Saturday morning cartoon.
Eventually, like, HBO cartoon.
And, like, here's the thing, though. Like, by the time I was old enough to buy those comics, I was already a teenager. The shit was already old hat. You know what I mean?
I liked Spawn as a kid, and I liked the movie. I did not fully understand the character until I watched the Angry Video Game Nerd's recent Spawn video games video, where I was like, oh, he can't use all his power. I didn't know that was the deal. I didn't know that's why he uses guns and shit. Because I used to always be
99999 is his power level, and if it hits zero, he's done. Yeah,
that's why I used to always be like, why is he always using guns? Isn't he like a demon man? Why is the demon man using guns? Like, I never got it, but I loved the figures. Like, that's, like, as a kid, I was a Lampshade fan for comics most of the time. I would read them sometimes, but I just love the look of the characters and the style, and, like, I just want the figures and, like, stuff like that.
I mean, if you want to personify 90s teenage edgelord that we all were and that we all loved, all you need is that Spawn number 2 of him just standing there with the fucking guns, because that was it. You know what I mean? That was the image. That was in every comic shop. They made so many different versions of toys of that fucking pose. And
the Ice Cream Man, like that,
the clown.
Billy Kincaid.
Oh, yep. Right, the pedophile ice cream man.
Like,
yeah.
That character is straight up
terrifying.
No, but, like, great character in the comics and all that, but it's the kind of character, like an edgy girl that you like when you're 17 would come up with. Like, you know, she's like, yeah, it's this guy, and he's like the ice cream man, but it's ice cream man. I'm thinking of getting a tattoo of it on my labia.
Ouch.
I'd be the guy. I'd be the only guy, though, who's like, wait, Ice Cream Man? You mean, like, the movie starring Clint Howard, the horror movie? Like, what are you talking about here?
You know, like the Van Halen song.
I'm your ice cream man. Stop wearing a basketball. I'm your ice cream man. Clint Howard killing your face. That image of that cover of that movie is like burned in my brain. I've never seen it, but it's one of those when you'd go to the rental store and you'd walk by and it's just like Clint Howard holding an ice cream cone with like eyeballs and blood, and it's just like burned into my fucking brain forever, that image of him.
It's like that what was this? Did you ever see that movie Wild Thing? It's like Beastmaster knockoff.
No.
Yeah, I remember the video of it going, holy shit, this is like some kind of superhero film where a guy controls animals somehow. This looks great. And like, I never rented it, and I looked at the trailer and it was like 25 and I was like going, whoa, dodge the bullet.
Nice. I love it.
There's definitely going to be some sex scenes in there that I wouldn't have been able to handle the cringe when, because, you know, I would have had the tape on when my mom was watching as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want that awkward moment.
I actually missed the kind of thrill that there was when you were a young kid walking into the video rental store. And because, like, horror movies in particular, like the shittier the movie, the better the cover. And
oh,
I just remember
pull you
seeing
in,
Mm-hmm. And I just remember seeing all the box art going, like, one day I'm going to be old enough to watch all of these, and God, they must be so good. And then remember when you're like 12, 13, 14, you start to get into it a little, and you're just like, oh, that's why no one ever rented these.
Oh, yeah, that was me at like 18, 19 when I finally started, like,
cake and dust. You're just like, yeah, turns out that five is too many.
All right, time to rent Night of the Living Dead 4 with the sexy looking zombie lady on the cover. This is gonna be great. Oh, this is garbage.
Well, that was Return of the Living Dead Part 3.
Oh, sorry. But with the lady in like the black, like fishnetty, like, okay, cool. See, burned in my brain, another image.
Because Return of the Living Dead, the first one, has that, what's her name, Linnea Quigley, and she is all kinds of naked in that film.
But that's
she
a good one, though.
Pretty good at being naked. I'll give her that.
That's the brains one, right? That's the one that really does the, like, they want to eat brain, right?
Yeah.
That was a fun one.
Yeah, the second one is really good as well. It's a fun movie.
It's three where it drops off.
Yeah, because they were, like, going, let's make her, make a queen zombie. No, won't do that. Actually, Keith, I'm not sure if you, I was discussing this with Mel and Matt, but, I think you should really watch the movie One Cut of the Dead.
I do want to see it. I do want to see it because Red Letter Media talked about it. And I was like, I have to see this fucking movie.
I watched it. I think it was last week I watched it. And genuinely, I think you in particular will enjoy it. Just because it's kind of like a Yakuza mission. In that, you know those movies where like Kiryu's in the movie and he just beats people up?
Yeah.
And like they're going, here, dress up as a samurai. It's kind of like that, the movie.
Okay, don't say too much more, because I hear, the worse, like, it's better to know nothing.
Go in as empty as you can.
Yeah.
But it starts out as one thing that you have to persevere with.
Right, that's what I've heard.
Genuinely, when you get to the third act, I was nearly in tears laughing at the last act.
Yeah, I hear it gets, like, really funny. So, like,
because the first part of it has all these odd moments. Like, you're going, like, what's that? Why did that happen? And then the third act explains why these strange things happen, and they all pay off.
Nice.
It's so funny.
I would say it's not funny, but Knives Out is a similar movie where there's a lot of setup and a lot of great payoff.
Well, this, like, I honestly, I've never really seen a movie like One Cut of the Dead. It's got three acts, and all three acts are essentially different films. There's a moment with one of the actors in it, and it's fucking. You see it at the beginning of the movie, and then you see it again later on with more context, and it's just like, oh, that's the best. I'm so happy he did that. It's so funny, and you realize it was this one zombie, and he's acting really strangely.
Yeah, stop.
Oh,
stop now.
So funny.
Stop now.
I got a question for you guys. What was the one horror film or film series that you couldn't wait to see and then was absolutely disappointed when you finally got to see it?
Like, as a kid, where I was like, I never wanted to watch horror movies as a kid. That was like, I was never really into them. I liked horror. I liked family-friendly horror as a kid.
I got several that I was like, when I finally got to see these movies, I'm like, not only are these not scary. They're just not good. Like, just, like, super disappointing.
Okay, you know what? The only one I can think of is in one night. So we went. I was very much an otaku, even more at the time. The Ring had come out. It was out, like, it was out in Blockbuster. And my friends wanted to rent it and watch it. And I was like, I want to watch the Japanese one first. I'm like, I don't want to watch this American one. I want to watch the original. So we went to Blockbuster. They had Ringu. We rented Ringu. We went back. We watched it. I was scared. I fucking loved it. And we were like, okay, we got time. Let's go return it and let's go rent the American one and watch that also in the same night. So we do that. And the Ring was just unimpressive. Like, I was just like, that was all right, but, like, I really liked the minimalistic nature of the Japanese one over the shock and horror jump scares of the American one with, you know, I crawled out of the TV and my face is all, you know, like, while the other one is literally a woman crawling out of a fucking television set. And there's no fucking special effects. That's like
going to a nice Japanese restaurant and getting some nice karagi, all right? Mm. And having that and going, oh, that was wonderful. You know what we should do? Go get some fucking McNuggets.
We didn't know, though. We didn't know. Like, we had no idea. Yeah, and it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm glad that happened because it means I had good taste even back then.
So, controversial opinion, maybe. House 2, and all of the Puppet Masters can go straight to hell. Like, what an app.
Terrible.
They're the garbage.
It's interesting because Mark from The Room is the star of it. Yeah, no, the House movies have amazing covers, but, like, they're not great. And
they're garbage.
Fright Night was a movie that I really wanted to see when I was younger. And I remember watching it and not being impressed by it, but I actually really liked the remake. There was a remake a few years ago with, Anton Yelchin and Tony Collette was in it.
I've definitely
Colin
seen
Farrell
Fright Night.
Was
I don't
a vampire.
Remember.
Okay. But, no, I really recommend the Fright Night remake. Colin Farrell is really good in it, and it's like, got some good scares in it, and it's really funny. I totally recommend it. It's much better than the original.
Yeah, oh, you know what was one I think I actually saw where, but I mean, like, this is like seeing Zombie and being like, after seeing, like actually seeing, fucking Dawn of the Dead and shit like that.
I mean, Zombie Flesh Eaters.
Yeah. I think that being like, oh, the Italian ones are probably even crazier, and then seeing it and being like, what the fuck? Like,
Zombie Holocaust, aka Dr. Butcher MD, aka A Million Other Things No Doubt. That's the one to check out because it's like the greatest hits of Italian exploitation movies because it starts out in New York, as they all do, and it quickly migrates to the jungle where there's loads of cannibals and then there's loads of zombies as well. And you're just there going, this is everything. Yeah. but there's amazing
Chud,
ones.
That's one too, Chud, where you're like...
Chud was like, a terrible disappointment.
Because the Chuds don't show up till the last like 5 minutes and then the movie's over. Yeah.
I will say that I think, weirdly enough, I remember seeing a late night feature about trauma movies and going, oh, I want to see what these are like. I'm watching them going, they were exactly what I thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them are fun. A lot of them are terrible. Like, Surf Nazis Must Die, great fun.
Oh, but God, then, so good, dude. We watched that actually, like, literally, like, not very long ago. Like, I think last summer or this past summer, we watched that because it was just on. And, like, that's got a stellar fucking soundtrack. The fucking soundtrack to Surf Nazis Must Die is, like, sick-ass retro wave, but, like, in the time of it being made. And, like, fucking Grandma Washington, Mrs. Washington is, like, the best part of that whole fucking movie. Like, oh, it's so good. I need something that can take a honky's head at 20 paces. Like, it's so... She's the best.
Class of Nukem High.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Class of Nukem High is good.
I like that one.
That one's not bad.
Yeah. The Toxic Avenger movies, they're fun. You know, like, they're... Like, it's funny how, like, they're... How local they feel. Like, I get the feeling that this is, like, a movie made specifically for Jersey.
Oh, yeah. I feel kind of bad. Like, Terra Firma now, like, looking back is very... It's, like, transphobe the movie, kind of, at this point. But it's... I still enjoy it for its super exploitive nature.
I haven't seen it in so fucking long. I used to like Tromeo and Juliet. I like that one a
Lemmy,
lot.
Oh, man. That's got fucking Lemmy. Like, how can
they
you
all got Lemmy. Them? They all got Lemmy in it.
A lot of them, too. Not all of them. But Lemmy's the narrator. Lemmy gets to be the, like, this tale of woe. Juliet to go Romeo. Like, it's fucking great that he gets to be, like, you know, the fucking the guy off on the side of the stage telling the story.
My favorite Lemmy line ever, and it's the most racist thing ever. Oh, that's a damn shame to happen on Bring a Mexican to School Day.
But that's totally a thing Troma would have in a movie, is bring a Mexican
school. God, what was the fucking movie was that?
I don't know. We watched, the one we watched on here was, what was the, what was it, Fried Chicken of the Dead, or what was it called?
Poultrygeist.
Yeah, that was.
That just sucks. That was bad.
Well, that's like late Troma. Like, we just have to throw all the shit at the wall, literally, in this movie to try to get a laugh.
It was no Sergeant Kabuki Man PI. That's for damn
sure. Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD is probably, like, one of the most racist things ever made, but, like, I loved that movie when I was in college.
Fucking rolling
villains up in sushi, like. It's horrible, dude. Like, it's so horrible. Like, but that's the whole thing too. It's like, yeah, Troma movies, they're problematic, but I think they're meant to be. Like, it's
of the company, guys.
Yeah. It's pretty close to trauma.
But it's like, those are very punk rock films, you know?
Yes.
And I think that, sadly, I mean, all the pop punk stuff really did, like, kill what was so great about punk in many ways. Because, you know,
thanks,
like,
Blink-182.
Yeah, but like, what? It's so fucked that what they did is in the same genre as what the Misfits were doing. Because I always say to people, I'm just there going, listen, you either survive Bullet or you're out. Like, like, I fucking love that song. I remember singing in a bar one night and just like some people joining in and you're going, okay. We're all on the same page here. Like, it's you're either cool with this or you're not. It's a bit of an ask, but I always enjoy that kind of like just fuck you for the sake of fuck you. That's just one of my favorite things in anything. And Troma was kind of like that as well. We're just like, we're just gonna do this. Why not? Like, it's gonna be fun for us to do to this day.
Yeah, but, I think that's what a lot of, and like, I think that's what a lot of these filmmakers nowadays do too. You know, they're like, "Hey, I'm gonna have Willem Dafoe jerking off in a lighthouse. Fuck you!" Like, and there.
Well,
you go.
Well, you know, I mean, thankfully, as I said, Keith, it's all the talented men filmmakers that are doing these things. You know, women are too busy remaking Cobra or something. I don't know.
Can they? Can a woman remake Cobra? Like, can we get that?
Seriously, I would finance like. Woman canon, like it was just, you made a remake of the Death Wish series.
Oh, Invasion USA starring a woman.
It'd be hilarious. I do it. It'd be funny. But I wouldn't want to cast the type of women that people would want to see. I'd be just like, what was her name? Is Cynthia Rotrock still around?
Hell yeah, dude! Yeah. Can she still do kung fu?
But,
we need her for Invasion USA.
What was that one? America 3000, which is that film should come back due to just how like the parody of America 3000 is ridiculous. Although I will say it's not really parody. That's giving the filmmakers too much fucking credit because it was just
Have either of you two seen the preview for the remake of Black Christmas?
No.
It is, like, the cringiest thing I've ever seen.
I just
seen
see
in
it on
my
feed
life.
And, like, Instagram and shit, and I'm like, I don't need this. Who wants this?
Much like... no one, and that's the thing, is, like, much like the Charlie's Angels things, I think the people who are making it are just assuming that every lady, because they're a lady, will go fucking see this and praise it, and it's like, you do realize that this is far fucking worse sexism than the leading... other person, the opposition, right? Like, this is beyond pandering. This is fucking insulting. Like, every second of that preview, and I understand it's not fair to judge a movie by the preview, but whoever made the preview, you need a fucking fire, because that looks terrible.
Yeah, like, there's good stuff nowadays.
Garbage.
Yeah, go see Jojo Rabbit. Go see The Lighthouse. Go see something
Jojo
directed
Rabbit.
By a woman, if that's what you're into, if that's something.
Never. Fucking never.
Because it's guys' night, Keith. And Mel's not here. It's guys' night.
You think I want to waste money when I leave the house? All right? Nah.
I don't know. A lady directed Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and it's on my top 10 favorite fucking films.
That was
films.
Terry Gilliam
that was
directed
Terry,
that.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Terry Gilliam directed that shit.
You sure Terry Gilliam wasn't a lady at one point?
I'm pretty sure Terry Gilliam is a man. Yes.
Damn.
No,
Billy Dee Williams direct anything? Because he's apparently gender fluid, so he counts as both.
The one film that nobody ever talks about when it comes to films directed by women, fucking American Psycho. That was directed by a woman. That film was tremendous.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And I think having it directed by a woman was the only way to make that movie, because, you know, a lot of it is just a guy killing women. And I think he just kind of, I don't know.
Oh. Fantasizing about it, anyway.
That film's tremendous.
Yeah, like, it's a great movie.
Yeah. The best scene in it, though, is the deleted scene. It's the, like, if you get the DVD or whatever, there's this deleted scene where Bateman is in a nightclub, and Christian Bale plays this so well, where this fucking white guy with dreads comes up to him, and he just goes, "Hey, Rasta, we jamming." And he says it so badly. It's so great. I've rewatched that. I was like one of those, you know, when you and all your friends come back from the bar at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. Like, that used to be one of the classics where you're like, we're back from the bar at 3 a.m. Let's watch the deleted scenes from American Psycho.
My favorite delivery from Bale in that movie. And it's just simple. It's just the way he says it. "Hey, man, is that a raincoat?" "Yeah!" It's just the fucking face he makes right before he swings the axe. Like, holy shit, man. This fucking movie is great.
Bale's a great actor.
You know the scene where he's telling these, what's it called, the secretary? Mm-hmm. Where they're going, "Oh, maybe we'll go get dinner tomorrow night." And she goes, "Is this okay?" And just the way he looks at her and goes, "Come on, you're prettier than that." And you're just there going, "This guy is a piece of shit."
He's the ultimate.
It's fucking, it's a really good book.
I need to read it.
Even if you've seen the film, the book is well worth reading. Okay. Because it's got enough extra stuff in there. It's fucking so offensive that it becomes hilarious, though. Like, he's fantasizing about murdering, like, a Vietnamese teenager at one point. And his inner monologue is so fucking violent and so fucking racist that it just becomes obscene to the point where it becomes hilarity.
I don't remember if I read that. I read Rules of Attraction, but I don't know if I read American Psycho. I can't remember the author's name.
I remember seeing the book. I think Rules of Attraction was great as well. I remember watching the movie of that and just feeling like I wanted to die.
Yeah, it's not the book. The book's way better. The book's way better than the movie.
I don't know. There's something about making a film about hateful people, you know.
That's how I felt.
It's like that film Hustlers.
Hustlers. I was thinking of Closer. Yeah. Closer is the one that I think of. That is just like, it's a movie about shitty people cheating on each other. Like, why would I want to watch this?
Well, that's the Hustlers movie, the one about the strippers, right?
Yeah.
Like, the film sells you this fucking false lie of, like, these brave women out there fucking making it in the world for themselves. And you're like, they're a fucking date rape gang who fucking fleece these people and destroy their lives. Like, they get guys liquored up, they fill them full of ketamine, and then they fucking steal all their money. And there's literally moments in the movie where they show, like, the consequences of their actions, which include ruining people's fucking entire lives. And you're going, I'm like, why are you trying to sell them to me as cool people?
Because, like, Scarface.
Because
Scarface, because that movie wasn't sold that way, but that's the way people have received it over the years. And now we have to make these people look like heroes and like cool people we want to be. And then you see the movie and then you don't get the message and you still think it's cool.
But
it's like Blow, and people are like, "Blow's great." And I'm like, yeah, Blow's a great movie about a fucking shitty dude. Like, and the whole point of the movie is that he never learns his lesson.
Scarface is, I think there's a, I kind of enjoy Scarface ironically, because its excess is so crazy. Like, I don't like Tony, though.
Yeah, it's a perfect 80s movie.
Well,
like,
he's unlikable.
It's a total perfect 80s movie.
I mean,
Chino is great as well. Like, there's that just one line where he goes to your man. The guy goes, "Hey, Tony, how about we do this?" And he goes, "Hey, fuck you, how about that?"
Scarface is a tale as old as time, told in the most 80s sheen that possibly could be done. And that is literally a guy with good intentions who's grown up around the worst shit becomes the fucking thing he hates and eventually kills him and everybody he fucking loves. Now, I don't, like, as that standalone story, that film is, you know, probably makes the 100 best film list all the time.
But how have so many people seen this movie and got the wrong message from it? Because it doesn't try to hide it. Like, from the minute Tony's successful in that film, the next second of that film is showing the downward spiral. Like, he has maybe 30 seconds in a cameo of living the high life in that fucking film, and then it all goes tits up so fucking quick.
Oh, man, like, Richard it's like... DeBell's Belzer is in Scarface. He's MC at Babylon Club.
Jesus.
That's great.
Well, the thing is,
1983, I was making sure it was 80s. I was like, it has to be, it's Coke.
But that's that Holsters movie is similar in that, like, they're just showing them living in their fucking ill-gotten apartment with all their fancy shit. And it's like the Goonies, they're screaming over each other constantly. Like, I will say there is interesting parts to that movie. Like, there's like a weird breakdown of how, like, the economic crash of 2008 affected the world of vice trade. Like, that was interesting. But ultimately, I was there going, these strippers are all shitty people and they deserve to be in jail. That was my feeling at the end of it, and I was there going, and I resent this film's fucking treatment of them with fucking sympathy and fucking sentimentality. I'm just like, fuck them. Like, I hope the fucking cops beat them up.
Yeah, no, it's a rule for me nowadays has been, if I watch your movie trailer and somewhere is it the clip that people use in all their rap songs of that girl going, money, then I'm not seeing your fucking movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, it has that money. I'm just like, nope, not seeing your fucking capitalist bullshit movie about getting whatever you can and fuck anybody else. Like, that's the American way. I get it, but, like, I don't want to see it on the big screen. I want Will Defoe jerking off in a lighthouse. That's what
I
want.
The thing is,
directed by a man.
Yeah. I mean,
how's a lady got to know how to do it right? I mean, that's the.
And I want the message of the movie to be anti-toxic masculinity and about gaslighting.
Keith, here's the thing, okay? A woman can only direct a movie for so many days out of the month. You know what I'm saying?
Right? Jesus fuck. All
right? A man can turn up to work every day.
You know, that I always find that as a weird subject, because I know women who are literally like, oh, I'm so anxious right now. Oh, I've been so anxious the last couple of days. Oh, I got my period. Oh, thank God. That's why I've been so anxious. But then I know other people are like, women don't get like that. And I'm like, I don't know what to think anymore. sexist to think that. But then I know women who are straight up like, yeah, I get really emotional around this time. Like, just so you know. Like, you know, like, it's...
I had a girlfriend who went through, like, she had she had debilitating periods. And I remember, like, she would be, on her deathbed.
Yeah, some women get it really bad, man. It's horrible.
And I'm just, like, ferrying puke and fucking shit out to the bathroom for her.
Yeah, it can get bad.
Like, you know, that's the thing. I earn my right to make all the period jokes I want. I fucking suffered in college, man. There's this fucking maelstrom of fucking fluids and pain.
I always find it awkward when women are like, oh, sorry, I'm or something like this, and I'm like, it's cool, man. I lived with a woman for like 6 years. We dated for 10. Like, I'm pretty cool with all this stuff now. Like, I don't know what kind of men you've dated, but like, if they're not cool and okay with the fact that this happens, like, they're assholes. Like, sorry. Like, it's whatever.
No, but you just said to her, you go, look, it's okay. When you need to go be filthy, you go do it in the other room.
I mean, yeah, that's why I built that room. I mean, it was a closet, but now it's the period room. It's a room if I call it a room, okay? This is not gaslighting. It's a room.
Yeah, and there's a rosary in there for you as well.
Yeah, pray. pray the pain away. Pray the pain away.
Well, you're in luck, sweetheart. That's because we got two bathrooms in this house. Well, which one should I use? The one with the rosary.
The outdoor one.
Oh, fuck. We got two bathrooms in this house. The human one and the dog one. You know which one you have to use this week.
Make sure you burn that shit, too. I'm not putting it out with a regular rosary.
I don't want to be out there raking and seeing anything. You better clean it up yourself.
I swear to God, if there are bears scooping around the backyard tonight, there will be problems.
Here's the thing, sweetheart, okay? If you bring the bear in, you deal with the bear, all right?
Shotguns on the side of the toilet. Good luck.
I'm so glad when Mel's not here, we have classic one-star episodes.
Oh, God. Two-star. Two, always the two.
Oh, it's two. Yeah, no.
One would be less insulting than two.
No, they only give us two because we have a woman on the podcast and we do those things normally. It's only a one because it's all men this time.
Yeah.
We get the immediate one extra star because we have the woman on.
They can't
discount Mel. That would be anti-feminist to not also
female. Mel should have her own podcast with three women, and they could all in the trailer go, "We're all stronger together, and we don't need men, and we can do anything that men can do, and we can do all this, and then nobody will ever listen to us."
Wait, you mean like Charlie's Angels? Oh.
You know why? Because fucking, it's classic human psychology, right? When someone talks about how great they are, and how brilliant they are, and how virtuous they are, everybody automatically assumes they're dicks. Like,
yeah,
because
you are.
Yeah. So, like, here's the thing. If you're a good person, it'll come out in the wash, okay? We'll figure that out ourselves. Jesus.
It's like the Lord said, those who praise God out in the streets, speak of all their good deeds and things they do, truly they have received their reward. But though, when you pray to my Father, do it inside and do it. Don't. You don't need to make a show of your good deeds, man. Like, just fucking.
In the King James version of the Bible, Jesus says, "Be a cunt in your own time."
and in the King Booker version, he says, "Hogan, I'm coming for you."
Keith, actually, I had a joke ready for you, and I forgot to tell it.
Oh.
I was watching The Man in the High Castle, the fucking show.
Yeah, what's it, Nazi America or whatever? Is that what it is? World War II goes
Yeah,
bad?
Yeah,
kind of. Going, yeah.
And I was watching it, and I was going, oh, it's about an alternate history, fucking, where the Nazis win, a.k.a. 2016, am I right?
Yeah, I'm like, dude, yeah, I'm so glad me and Meanie talked a lot about it. Like, God, that put me through the ringer, dude. It really did.
Well, you and two-thirds of the nation don't feel too bad.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's fucking horrible. We got to do it again next year. Like, I don't want to do this again.
Well, you don't have to.
We don't.
Well, I'll just put it that way.
As the
Look,
right
you know you're gonna vote for
man gets the nomination.
And if not, start throwing rosaries at her because
look, it's
we'll
not
need
my
it.
Fault. The one decent woman candidate decided to propose a healthcare plan that was already a man's healthcare plan. So,
true.
You know,
not picking back off of our dicks, literally.
Exactly.
Well, look, all right. Again, a man can be president 365 days a year. Okay.
God damn it! All right.
That's what Warren should be running on. Like, I'm too old to have a period, so, like, I can do the job.
Do you want some emotional maniac sitting there with her finger on the button, and that finger, which has already been on her own button, because she's a filthy whore as well?
I'm still not... I'm sorry, but there's a rosary in there too, bitch. Maybe the funniest line you have ever fucking said.
There's a joke before, I remember... here and I was like, that is genuinely funny, where someone said, if you want to prevent nuclear war, let America have a woman president, and hide the launch codes for the nukes in a jar.
Oh. See, that's another one of those things I hear, like, people like get annoyed at, but I legitimately know women who are like, no, I need you to open this, like, you know.
You know how many jars I have had to open in my fucking life?
Oh man, I worked in a video shop, right, where I was the only man. The amount of shit that I had to lift, like, was ridiculous.
I think
this.
They just liked watching you, probably, John.
Oh yeah, they were just like, yeah, this fucking this fucking schlub here, he can really lift those PlayStations.
Damn.
But
you lift those PlayStations, Johnny boy.
I'll tell you, at work, every time a water jug needs replacing, oh, Matt, in like 15 different fucking languages. So just saying, listen, there's some, like, all stereotypes There's always that little itty bitty piece of truth hidden somewhere in there, isn't there, folks?
Yeah, there's a little bit of truth somewhere deep down in there sometimes.
And if you don't think so, go into the special bathroom, grab that rosary, and start praying.
If you don't think so, look at the list of all the best directors there are.
Yeah, yeah. All of them opened their own jars.
Name me. Oh, this is so fucking bad. Name me one female astronaut that survived.
Sure, man, that's why the Challenger, they put that school teacher on.
Seriously, put a girl on an airplane, a fucking shuttle, kaboom. Like,
I mean, they shouldn't be on those either, Matt, you know. Like,
I agree. Was,
you know, sorry, joking.
Amelia Earhart, just saying.
This is...
Challenge.
She was too busy. You know what, she got lost. She was
in the bathroom.
She was doing her makeup in the mirror and got turned around.
If you're listening and you don't get it, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry you had to listen to us do this. If you don't get it or are new to this, I'm so sorry.
don't worry, guys. Next week, Mel will be here, and she will say something far more sexist than
I did. She'll be back here saying worse.
That woman hates her own kind.
But this is the thing. Outlined multiple times before, the best, let's call it, the best comedy comes from destroying idols. And nothing is sacred. And that's the rule. It's essentially just people who are too much of, we're just too wussy to be Hell's Angels. That's kind of it.
I want to be off the grid and left alone, and but have good times until I die. That sounds good, but games, so like I've got my PlayStation 4.
I would like to thank all the people, all right, out there who people complain about endlessly, going, oh, these people, they're too PC, they're too this, that, and the other. Thank you for bringing back shame, okay? Because without shame, there's no lines to cross and no comedy to make, okay? We got a little bit too hedonistic, and now we've got a bit more shame back, and there's shit to joke about, and it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, John, I think me and you said it about 4 or 5 years ago as we both smiled and went, oh, looky, we have enemies again. Hooray!
Well, dude, I made a joke the other day at work, and like it was one of those things where I was like, I was saying the joke, and I was like, I hope me and Mikhail are cool enough for me to say this right now. But it was something about, I can't remember exactly. Mikhail was just like, well, yeah, you know, like, you know, I usually like, it, you know, we'd be safe. It's fine, you know, we'll be safe, or whatever. And I trust most people, something like that. I was like, hey, look, as long as he's not wearing a blue uniform, you'll be fine.
Hey, I've said far worse.
And Mikhail laughed. So I was like, awesome. We got the kind of friendship now, dude. Like, once again, you're allowed to joke about those things because the truth is the funniest thing.
Well, the thing is, you're allowed to joke about most things. It's just the internet has given the idea that you can't, even though you can. And it's
there's a line to walk, dude. It's something I've been saying a lot. It's like people drew all these ridiculous lines, and all they really are doing is separating us even more. And it's getting stupid. It's getting so minute. It's insane.
Well, and what the lines really mean is like, if I don't know you, I don't want you ever saying these things. And to which my point has always been, fuck you.
If I don't know you, how do I know what's okay to say around you? I'm very sorry if you heard me say something you don't like. I didn't fucking know.
But it's never going to be something they hear you say. It's going to be what a stranger saw you type on something. And
on top
again,
of that, here's the thing. There's a way around it.
Don't.
If someone's behavior that they don't think is upsetting you, what you do is you act like a fucking adult and you take him aside and go, listen, this is just kind of not working for me. Can we find the middle ground here? But that takes being a fucking grown-up. That's what a lot of people don't want to do. Like, it literally, I can't remember who said it, but I remember someone introduced the idea where they're just like, nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to make people hate me. You know, nobody kind of goes out of the world. Some people just do that by accident.
Yep.
And I don't know. Just fucking treat them like a human being and talk to them, and maybe they might just come on side with you anyway.
But I mean, flip side, the flip side to this, and I will stick, I don't care what this world says otherwise, a friend, a true friend, is somebody you can be horrible with, consequence-free. Like, that is that is the definition of a friend to me. Like,
well, it's like I said before, like, you can tell when someone's really genuinely not a racist, right? Mm. Because they'll have friends from other races that they're racist to.
Yes!
In humor situations. You know, where you go, yeah, me and you are such good pals that this thing, this big thing that ruins the world, me and you were able to have a bit of a crack about it, like, you know, because why not?
Do you know what that, you know, that's what, like you were saying, having shame again. That is one of my favorite fucking things. I get to make white jokes. I think that's my favorite new thing of becoming an adult in this society, is white people not being the norm. And guess what? There's horrible stereotypes about us. I'm going to make jokes about them. I don't give a fuck.
You should be able to make jokes about any stereotype
you want
to.
Can I be the, like, white guy Sinbad? Be like, what dudes be like?
I mean, If you want to be like any number of a million dudes from the 90s, sure, you can.
Well, there's a great, like, there's actually a good lead-in if you wanted to do stand-up. You go, hey, let me tell you what white Christmas is like. And then you're just going to go, actually, you know what? You probably already know. You've seen it in the films. Right, you know what it's like. How long have you been holding on to that one, John? Oh, that's a fresh one for today, man. Like, it's I always said my favorite joke ever of like my favorite opening line in stand-up ever is Larry David walking out on stage, standing there, and then going, you know what I respect about Hitler? He never took shit from magicians. And I was like, that's the greatest line anyone's ever come up with as an opener.
Brilliant. And on that, guys, I think we're going to end it because we are past the 2-hour mark.
We have gone a while.
Way over the 2-hour mark. Holy shit.
I know. I was like, let's have a short one. And, like, it's it's good to
why
talk.
Why cut the fun short? Exactly.
Guys, night.
It took us an hour to get into the sexism. So,
I mean, I think we covered the gamut. We got a couple of Hitler mentions. We talked about wrestling for an hour and a half, and then we made fun of women and their horrible menses. So I think we did the trifecta, boys. We did it.
We made fun of women and their struggle. It was a great time.
Oh, what struggle? Just sit down and let it happen. Jesus Christ.
No, because here's the thing. We're not making fun of that. We're not making fun of their struggle. We're satirizing the shit heels that do.
Oh, yeah, and, like, one of my favorite jokes in the last few years was Bill Burr talking about how, like, he's in a weird position because, like, obviously he's married to a black woman, so he obviously
I did not know that.
But he always gives out about, like, white women complaining about stuff, and he's there going, oh, you can tell this thing down the internet, you can tell it's just a white woman started complaining about it. I said, I wanted to look at them and go, hey, you're in the hot tub with me too, okay?
It's true. We give ourselves a bad fucking name, man. God.
Keith, I think you'll appreciate this story. I went to see my mom 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I just hadn't seen her in a couple of weeks, and I just caught up with her. And we were having dinner in Dublin, and about 5 minutes into dinner, she goes, tell you one thing, that fucking Epstein didn't kill himself.
Yes! Oh my God, I love your mom. Your mom is a fucking mwah, 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 mwah. Mama Carberry, those are for you. Mwah, 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 mwah. Those are all for you. I love you. I fucking love you. It's the truth, and it's what's going to truly bring us together. You get together with family this holiday season. Don't talk about Trump. Don't talk about Warren. Don't talk about Bernie. Talk about Epstein. Because you will come together because you will realize everybody fucking knows he didn't kill himself.
It's just funny, like, she just was sitting there having her dinner.
That's so good.
She
goes, my God.
You know that, I was watching that Prince Andrew on TV. That fucking Epstein, he didn't kill himself.
Oh my God, fucking Prince Andrew. What a fucking piece of shit. Oh my God, and he's always been a piece of shit. So, like, why is this a fucking surprise? Like, oh my God.
To be fair, he is from a, you know, fucking criminal cartel family, so.
Oh my God, it's their.
He's from a long piece of shit.
Yeah, now he's, like, leaving the public, whatever. Like, yeah, of course you are, because you fucking, like, God, if you played poker, sir, you'd be horrible. You would be horrible at poker, Prince Andrew.
I wasn't aware at the time.
I wasn't aware.
Completely off.
I don't recall.
But...
there's the new, like, lock all for everything. You're gonna hear "I don't recall" so many times with this shit. It's gonna be horrible.
For the second holiday season in a row, I tried to hustle money off of my 12 to 14 year old cousins during Thanksgiving and cards.
Yeah, nice. I remember that.
This time, the little shits took me for $10.
Oh, nice. Hey, I would be proud. Be proud, man.
I was, dude. I'm not crying about it. I was.
They literally came up to me, but I wasn't crying.
They literally came up to me. Rematch? Oh, it's fucking on. You gonna challenge me? All right, let's go. It's fucking on. Set up a poker table in the middle of Thanksgiving.
He fucking stepped to you this year. That's brilliant.
But they tried to hustle me last year.
Yeah.
Well, the youngest one, who was the one who won this year, was the one that was trying to take me for a sucker last year. And I ended up taking like 20 of his fucking Christmas dollars, which was the greatest highlight of last year's holiday season. But yeah, this year the little bastard took me for 10. Like, like in 3 weeks we're having a rematch. Fucking don't you fucking think we're not.
Christmas is coming. Watch out.
Grandmas and grandpas be giving you cash for Christmas, so I don't know when to come at you next time.
Krampus is coming, but, bitch.
I don't know. I think that's a Christmas tradition, gambling. But hey, whatever. Apparently, it's not a good thing to do on a holiday.
I went and saw Knives Out with Shannon, and she was like, "That's a movie I'd watch every Thanksgiving." And I was like, "Well, it is about family, so yeah, I think it would be a great one to watch every Thanksgiving."
Yeah, I gotta get a hustle on my fucking films to watch before the season's over. I still haven't watched Gremlins yet. Or Scrooged, so gotta get a go on that.
I haven't watched that.
Anyways,
I got too many other new movies are coming out to watch, so fuck it. Anyways.
Anyways, we gotta get a go on because this thing's going super late. Johnny, anything you want to say before we're out of here?
Yeah, I didn't mean it, ladies.
No, fuck it, cut it. End of the show. Cut. Fucking. Hear the sound of rosary beads hitting the fucking pavement. And the fucking show. No. Absolutely fucking done. Anything, Keith?
Follow me on Twitter at Robaduke, because we love you. We love you, babies. We love you, women. We love you.
Yeah, just don't direct movies.
Or go fucking make something that I like want to fucking see. I mean, Jesus, come on. Mm-hmm. More Willem Dafoe masturbating, that's a winner. Nazi Youth, that's a winner this year. Jared Leto dancing down some stairs. Joaquin Phoenix dancing down some stairs.
Oh, blasphemy.
Not the worst movie. Decent movie. I mean, like, there wasn't much this year, man. Let's not get into it, because we'll have an end-of-the-year episode to talk about movies, so let's not. On Twitter, at RoboDuke, I love women.
And there's a rosary.
I love women.
I've never cried.
Oh my god! And there's a rosary in there for you too, bitch. Slams door. Good night, everybody. Say good night, bitches. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Good night, bitches of non-specific gender.
You wicked woman. You done put your curse on me. Why didn't you just leave that apple hanging in the tree? You make us hate our husbands, our lovers, and